Well, you'll give us more money if we stop singing.
Right. Or give it, extend our deadline.
The first thing I want to do, because we're waiting for a spreadsheet, is if for those of you that picked up this agenda on the last page, there's some language issues that we have between the Senate and us. So Senator Pappas, the Senate language on the funding policies for higher education, I'm going to agree to that. And I don't know if there's any questions by any members on the differences. But I do have a, and the language on the, that Senator Lantz wanted on the Legislative Advisory Committee to come back, that's, do we have that as an
Do you want to look at it now?
No, we'll just, maybe we can pass it out though and then vote on that as we're going through this discussion.
Senator Lantz is in Claims Committee, so we should wait till he gets here.
I hope he's not monkeying around with that little claims that I got that he didn't like. I should go check on it. The third item, if where is Ms. Egard is here. Susan, would you come to the table on this $20 million demonstration project, if you want to call it that, on your loan investment? Because Senator Pappas had a proposal, and I'm assuming you've got language on that, too. But I want to know why. I mean, we've done things to let local units of government, as an example, invest through the State Board of Investment because they get such a good, I mean, they've been doing pretty good as far as their rate of return, and they're pretty good stewards, very good stewards of the state's money. So I'm wondering, I just want clarification on the record why you can't, why you're not satisfied with maybe going through the Board of Investment.
Mr. Chair, may I ask Dr. Michikanis here to speak to that issue?
Mr. Chair, members of the conference committee, on the investment side, we're still required to invest only in financial instruments that are allowed under statute. I'm not sure if it's 16B or whatever, but under the same set of investments that the Department of Finance and everybody else does. This is when we issue bonds. We can essentially, we issue variable rate bonds, and we can essentially trade them, swap them, which was the term here, for a lower interest rate, the way it's structured. So it's really a cost savings issue. We save money on the interest rate, we put it back into the program, and then we reduce our margin that reduces interest rates to all students.
So you can't utilize the Board of Investment and the investors and people that they hire to do that type of thing for the state's money because it's a bond issue?
Mr. Chair, we don't have the authority to do this, do the interest rate swaps under the current Board of Investment on the bond side, but we will do all the investments on. Oh, you as do you mean use the State Board of Investment
right.
to enter into a swap agreement?
Right.
I don't believe that they even do that, Mr. Chair. This deals with investment bankers and people that work in the marketplace.
And what percentage is that of your total? It's like
Mr. Chair, the program is almost a $900 million program on gross assets. The net is about $600 million, so it'd be roughly $20 million out of $600
million. Any questions from anybody on? So we'll basically accept that too then, Madam Chair. Ms. Novak has informed me that we could probably move some things on the side-by-side that we would do conceptually, like on page, on...
Do you want to push on to this?
Yeah, maybe we can do that. The achieve, what we've come up with is a, in our proposal, is a $4 million proposal for achieve, where we blend in the ICAP and Get Ready programs that are currently available through OHG. OHG.
Mr. Chairman.
So Senator Pappas, if you want to come.
I just want to make a comment that I went back and I looked at the language authorizing ICAP, and it says that one of the purposes of ICAP is to promote rigorous high school education and preparation for college. So I've asked Ms. Weidman, she's probably working on it now, to go back and strengthen that language to make sure that that is required with every grantee has to be working on strategies and methods to promote rigorous language, rigorous courses in high school. And we just bumped up the program a little bit. I hadn't even really decided, because Ms. Hegard was out of town, you know, whether Get Ready should get more money or just put it on ICAP. And we even came up with a great acronym for this new program, Achieve Success Through Persistence and Innovative Rigorous Education. Aspire.
Aspire. Actually, call it the Aspire to Achieve.
The Aspire to Achieve. Right. Here we go.
And so we have an idea to still have the rigorous Stripe program offerings.
And Mr. Chairman, I forgot
also,
one thing.
Go ahead.
Sorry. One other category, Ms. Hegard, of grantee, and I don't know if Ms. Vessel is here, that would be eligible is if you had a if you wanted to have a pilot project to experiment with whether financial incentives would be an incentive to taking rigorous courses. That also could be part of the program. But I did want the financial incentive money itself to be privately raised. And I'm really hoping the Private College Council will take this on and pilot it and demonstrate to us whether this will work or not.
And we're also looking in there at using technology and
college in the schools.
For college in the schools type program, because in many parts of rural Minnesota, that isn't available. And we're also looking at maybe some type of process to get the K-12 system or the school districts and the higher education Minsky system to cooperate more on post-secondary options, because as you know, there's a lot of turf protection going on out there. And you know, there are, I know, I think the Bemidji, the Brainerd area, I ran into former Representative Opatz, and they're working with their five local school districts to work something out where post-secondary options are available, but you don't lose all the K-12 funding. So, Ms. Hegard, you want to?
Mr. Chairman, just to add the other thing that Representative Rukavina brought to my attention is that the College and the Schools program, which we have maybe more broadly in the metropolitan area, is not as easily available in rural Minnesota. So we thought we really needed to help facilitate more contracts between school districts and Minsky and the U and those who offer College and the School program to make it more widely available.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, I just have a couple questions. The first one would be, when might we have a chance to take a look at the language? I'd like to be able to go back to the governor's office and speak with them about it.
We are working on the language as we speak here.
As soon as Ms. Weidman brings the language, she'll have it.
Would I have a chance to go back to the governor's office and at least talk with them about this before a final decision or vote is taken on the provision?
I hope you would.
Yeah.
We have to get this bill put together and
by today.
By 6 o'clock tonight, in order to keep our deadlines, our agenda on the course.
Mr. Chair, I just have a couple points. One is just, it's important to see the language, just because I'd want to see whether it's sort of systemic in its approach, or is it sort of, I don't mean this is in a negative way, is it sort of piecemeal in that it's a small program? I just want to make sure that I understand what it is that you're talking about. And then, is there an element of this that would allow a student to save for college? And then the overall amount, my understanding, I don't know what the target is, because I just got in late last night, but the target, my understanding, is above the governor's, at least that's what I hear. If that's the case, it would seem to me that there should be a way to find some additional revenue for this program. So I just want to have a chance to see the language, go back to the governor's office, so that we don't have to have a problem at the end. I think we should be able to work this out, I think, together.
The spreadsheet will be coming pretty quick here, so everybody can see what the dollar amount we're talking about. Roughly, I think the dollar amount is about $43 million less than what was in our bill. So we had to cut out that amount out of our bill for the information of the audience. Ms. Hegar, the governor's goal in his ACHIEVE program was to, for rigorous educational programs to be available out there in a voucher type system to save kids money to go to school as they go on to higher education. We're trying to do the same thing, and that save money, whether you utilize these other programs we're talking about here or post-secondary options. You know, if we can, in isolated areas of the state or school districts that don't offer advanced courses, if we can get more utilization of post-secondary education options and save high school kids a year of college, I think that accomplishes that goal. And so, you know, we're trying to put some language together that you'll see, but we wanted to bring all of these issues that are still on the table up publicly here this morning as we staff scrambles with the revisers to draft language that we'll be voting on later. We want the concepts to be thrown out here, and then we have to get this bill out of here by 6 o'clock tonight in order to meet our deadlines to have the bill taken up tomorrow.
Unless you can
have the governor talk, Representative Seifert, into allowing us to, you know, suspend the Constitution and take the bill up earlier. If you can make that guarantee, we might be able to take a little more time. Representative Farnham.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, is ICAP available to all school districts in the state?
Pardon me?
Is ICAP available to all school districts in the state?
Under this concept, it will be. I don't know if it is now.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, all school districts, higher education institutions, community organizations, there's a variety, right, Ms. Hegar, that can apply for ICAP.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, that's correct, but it's a fairly small program right now, and one of the concerns, I think, would just be that whatever program you come up with, the category of students that would qualify for it, you need to make sure that it's available, on, I would say, on a statewide basis, so there's some fairness and parity. But we'd like to see the language, and this, I know you're busy, but the sooner the better, and then I can have a chance to go back, check in with the folks in the governor's office, and then get back to you. Okay. Thank you.
Then, members, continuing on here, the living miscellaneous expense formula, we, Ms. Hegar, we want to keep the same language that's currently in statute, I believe, is what, isn't that what we agreed to? The current statutory language that's on the extension
LME.
Of LME?
Yes. It extends on 2 years.
Yeah, extended. Just like they did that in the last one. The House language on the Minscu degree programs on 120 and 60 with a waiver mechanism, which we're working on right now, I think as we speak, which we Minscu will have the option to look at and tell us if we're, if that works for them. That's key. The railroad retiree, I think we agreed to, which is, you know, not a big deal. The construction management program, I know that Senator Roebling still has some concerns, but I think we've tentatively agreed to that. And yeah, and we will add the university because the university has that program and it was inadvertently left out. So the university will also be, I mean, those fees will be available to the university program. The compromise language on Minscu board, Senator Roebling has been working with Representative Reinert on, and we will see a copy of that hopefully shortly too. Do you want to just two of you talk about your, I still don't want to give up and give in on the university because I'm right on the Board of Regents, but be that as it may, I always am willing to compromise. Would you take that back to the governor, Ms. Hegar, that I'm compromising too here, and he has to learn how to compromise a little better?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Duly noted.
Senator or Representative, which one wants to take?
You, about the regents?
Yeah, just to throw out what we are considering.
We are proposing that we go back to the legislature and not have the governor making recommendations. So but we're proposing to keep the advisory council, and they would of course do the preliminary screening, and then a joint committee of the higher ed policy and budget divisions would meet, and they would interview the candidates, have them present themselves, and we'd be able to ask questions of them. And we also would allow legislators to nominate other people that maybe hadn't come through as recommended through the advisory council. We're thinking that if three House members and two senators wanted to recommend someone, then they would come and present before the joint committee as well. Knowing that anybody can nominate who they want on the floor, we thought this might be a way that at least we could have a public appearance by candidates who could be nominated on the floor, so that other legislators would have an opportunity to meet them, the public would have an opportunity to sit in a hearing room and hear from them and know something about them as well. And it's just an acknowledgement that the Constitution allows anyone to nominate from the floor, but we want to try and look at that process ahead of time, look at those candidates ahead of time. A proposal that I had, I don't know if we had a lot of discussion on it, is that that committee, that joint committee, would meet at least twice, one time to meet the candidates and ask questions, and then a week later to vote, so that candidates could come around and visit with legislators during that time before we actually voted on them. Give us a little better opportunity if we wanted to get to know them better. It would bring some of that old visiting back into the process if we gave that week span, perhaps.
So do you have a timeline in mind on when this would cutoff date would be before the joint convention? Or?
We didn't set a date. We were thinking that the recommendations usually come from the advisory council in January. I think that might be their deadline. And that
so we're talking the end of February, right?
We would be meeting in February.
Okay, so any comments from the committee on that? Any comments from the university, or do you want to bring in your ringer from the University Alumni Association to comment on this?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to state publicly that the whole tradition of congressional caucuses can continue. There was never any authorizing language in law, and there's never anything preventing it from happening. For whatever reason, the 5th Congressional District chose not to caucus this last go-round. But, you know, congressional caucuses, they can still nominate candidates. And if from the floor, or we think it might be a better idea to, if they have a candidate that's not recommended by RCAC, to at least have them go through the joint legislative committee, the two committees.
Let's talk about the Minsky then. Go ahead, Representative Ryan. Why don't you take that one?
It looks
so
like
we can have Ms. King jump up here and tell us what we're doing right or wrong.
I haven't seen the last proposal of language, but our conversation was to balance the requirement for union membership with a parallel requirement for business membership. So the recommendation for two members of the largest labor organization would be balanced by two members from the largest business organization, or some similar language. I don't know how that language is being crafted. And the selection process would parallel. Whatever we put into statute for selection of the union membership would be paralleled by a similar selection process for the business membership, so that there would be that balance, and it would be less politicized there, because both opportunities would be there for labor and business representation. Whether we had the House language originally had 17 members, upping it to 15. In our discussions, we didn't believe the number was as critical as the structure for selection. So whether it's left at 15 or 17 could be open for discussion, but I don't really see any, or we didn't in our discussion see any logistical reason for increasing the size of the board if you guarantee the two labor representatives along with the two business representatives.
And next year there are four appointments, sir? And the three students would still be there as currently spelled out. And the geographic and gender and ethnic.
That we
can
have.
We have a short Croatian from the Iron Range on automatic? No? Is there Michelle? hear that one? Okay. But what about that? The whole, the language that was Senator Pappas in the Senate bill on that?
Mr. Chair, we included that language that the Senate had in about the balance, about gender, ethnic groups.
So, right now, the issue really then is, after agreeing upon everything, whether or not the Minsky can afford to buy two more chairs to put at the table or a bigger table.
Mr. Chair, we didn't necessarily see the logic of needing to increase the size of the board because if you have 15 members and you guarantee two labor, you're actually giving them more proportionate power by maintaining the current number than by increasing the number. So what would the reason be for increasing the size? I mean, that was our discussion.
Well, I like decreasing the size. Personally, when I got elected, I decreased the size of the legislature. So, yeah. Well, let's think about
the makeup.
Then. So you have three students that have to be on there. Then you're going to have
eight
two, and then you've got the eight congressional. That's 11. Then you've got the two business and labor. So you're up to 15 right there. So now you have to make sure as you appoint the congressional that you find the people to fill the gender and ethnic and racial balance.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
people appointments
can do,
of the
right
business or
and you can do double duty. You can be from the 4th district and be a business person, or from the 5th district and be a labor person. And
any problems with the committee?
A black female labor from the
Iron Range.
Iron Range. Okay.
Any comments from Minsky? Okay. Well, that's the idea there. Let's move on then to the athletic contract buyout language. We are going to exclude Minsky from that and leave the university, which said they didn't have a problem with it. And that was, is any comments from the committee on that? That's what we're thinking from the audience. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Just want to make sure with the University of Minnesota that the language says, I believe, direct or indirect state funding, and I just want to make sure. I assume you looked at that. Okay.
Ms. Peterson told me they didn't have a problem with it, so I'm assuming that. Mr. Fitzenritter, is there, at one time there wasn't any problem with direct or indirect language. Is there a problem with it now?
No.
Okay. Moving on then, the University of Minnesota, we were going to make the language for the quota program. I believe it will be going to the university, that money, instead of, is it going to OHE?
Yes.
Okay, going to the university with the concept that that program would be at the Twin Cities campus and the Ojibwe program would be at the Duluth campus as proposed initially by the university, and I both those programs are, if we're talking about $300,000 ongoing money. We still haven't solved the India Center. Representative Paulson is going to come here around quarter after 10 or so, I believe, with someone from the university or someone from the Indian community. So we'll listen to that, and I don't know if the university wants to talk about this at this time or wait to talk about it or not talk about it at all.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
in our private discussions, I just really felt like this needs to be a program that's more strongly supported by the International Center, the university, the Indian community, and having only heard from Representative Paulson and Senator Chaudhry, I just don't know if we're ready to move ahead with funding an India Center. So that's just my reluctance.
Representative Paulson will be bringing someone here. We can listen to that. On the Minsky technology, I have to say that we both kind of fought for new money in the spreadsheet. Did we hand out the spreadsheet yet?
No.
In the spreadsheet, you'll see that there's some one-time money for technology, and then also we're going to have a discussion on your, Ms. King, your, you know, critical versus urgent language in the informational packet that you sent to Senator Pappas. But we'll move on with that. My only request, and I'm still holding to it, is that we don't see any buildup of positions at the central office with this. So right now we're, I guess, discussing whether or not my language is appropriate.
But that's not agreed to.
Well, come on, you got to give me something. By the way, we're still 5-0 for the Senate on the beginning of this conference committee. So we've got five things, bang, 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 that we get right off the bat. Okay, the items on the you'll see all of these as we go on, move on to discuss the budget spreadsheet that we're going to hand out pretty quickly. The banded tuition at the university is going to be in the bill as requested, along with the university scholarship program, which we used the $5 million request, Mr. Fitzenritter, and I think we gave split it 2 and 3 over the biennium with the $1.5 million dollar match request. Senate has agreed to our language on the greenhouse gas study at the Center for Transportation Studies at the university. The language that was in the Senate bill that I think Representative Dietrich had on the House side will be in there. The Senate's credit card marketing with an exemption for...
It's only for undergrads.
For undergraduates, or for like the Alumni Association to be able to market to graduate students will be clarified. And I don't see, other than Mr. Nelson here from the union, the request, I believe it was by the IFO on this legislative commission, which the Senate really hasn't agreed to, but we've agreed to hold some hearings and discuss that whole issue over the interim. So with that, if there are any questions from the audience on any of this, if not, why don't we hand out this spreadsheet to, do the members have the spreadsheet yet? Hand out the, hand out to the committee, and then the audience, I'm sure there's enough.
I'll pass them out to you guys so don't fall off.
Okay. I'm getting nervous.
Can you bring me some?
I wrote that on there.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Members, if you put down, what we got our targets, Senator Pappas had offered a proposal, but she had to get going to the opera, which I thought she was actually going to sing at after I heard her voice. She really got an excellent voice. So we did have a target. I believe the target is under the governor's. Ms. Hegart, is she still around here? Including the one-time money and everything else. It's, as I said, about $43 million less than the House bill. So when Senator Pappas proposed it, I believe she proposed a base increase to both the Minsku and the university systems of $136 million increase. And then we added on from there. So, Matt, Senator Pappas.
Maybe you just want to tell people that our target was $30 million above the Senate in ongoing money. And 36 million in one time, but we were instructed to fund UM Mayo partnership at 25 million, and so that left us 11 million in one-time money to appropriate. And we have from Mayo, we have 16 million in the tails, and the other overall requirements are 3% inflation adjustments for all budgets.
And we will be having some language for the two systems that addresses to clarify that we expect, you know, that 3% inflationary amount to be obeyed.
Followed.
Okay.
Respected.
I am. Yeah, give them a little direction. But let's go over this for the sake of the committee then. So the base number that you see on Minsku there is basically put out there, as I said, with no line technology or underrepresented students or STEM initiatives clarified but or spelled out in a dollar amount. But we do have some questions like on technology, and we will have some language, writer language for Minsku. In this is a 6.1, I believe, one-time money technology for the Minsku system, on top of what you determined to put into technology on your own with that money that's going in the base. But I do have some questions on that later. Members, as you can see, the DREAM Act is not in this bill, but there is a line here on line 10, I believe it is, for a pilot program, I guess I would call it, beginning program for non-resident tuition in our two-year institutions. And there will be language. Do you want to take over here, Senator, on which systems we're looking at?
We are looking at this as a workforce issue, that we want to move to resident tuition in order to attract more people to in order to attract people to move to our state, because once they go to school here they tend to stay, and the schools that we're going to begin with are St. Paul College, MCTC, Rochester Technical and Community, Inverhills Community College, St. Cloud Technical, and the Northeast Higher Education District. So that's six, and that comes to, in order to pay for that, that's 3.436 on the spreadsheet, line number 10. so those schools. And then we'll have language to ask Minsky then to have a plan to move the entire system to flat tuition. There are several colleges that are already at flat tuition. I think Ridgewater, Moorhead,
Bemidji,
that already do just charge one tuition rate.
I see Representative Paulson is here, so Representative Paulson, without delay, why don't you come up? And the House is holding out for $250,000 for your India Center to be matched dollar for dollar by non-state sources. The Senate has some questions on, I don't know if the merits, I guess not questions on the merit, but questions on the constituency that might be out there to ask for this. So
right. Mr.
welcome
Chairman,
back to
and Representative Paulson, I know you were before us before, but I just don't, the Senate conferees just don't feel like we're ready to move ahead and fund this. We don't know that the university has enough history of partnerships and academic exchanges with India, and given the limited budget we have, we're not sure if we can afford to fund a new program. I mean, we're not fully funding the university's request. They're not going to have money to do a lot of their new initiatives, nor is Minsky. So why does this new initiative stand out as something that we should fund?
Sure. And
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. I won't take too much time because I don't want to repeat what I said last time, but I offered the concept of the India Center because you know, the university is definitely a premier institution in the state, both in terms of its size and its reputation. And there are many at the university who have contacted me in support of this initiative. And with me today, I brought one professor on short notice who was willing to come down and just offer some insight. I think Professor Ned Mohan, who will share that there is actually a large Indian community that is interested, I think, not only from private, you know, with private side willing to contribute to this, but also within the university itself that sees some opportunity here. And he's in the area in the field of electronic engineering, and I think is really an area that I think this committee in particular, I know, is interested in terms of its development from education standpoint and jobs in terms of where the science and math is going to be driving the global economy. So with that, I'd be happy to have him just give a few comments about the real support for this initiative and answer any other questions.
Welcome, Professor. Just identify yourself.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ned Mohan, and I am with the University of Minnesota, and this is my 31st year of teaching. I started in 1975, so I have been here for a while. And I really appreciate Mr. Paulson putting up this bill. Can you hear me all right?
Thanks. Go
ahead. Yeah. So, but I think there are a lot of similarities, first of all, between two countries, India and India being the largest democracy. And of course, you are very well aware of the problems India has, but you probably not have heard about the potential as much. And so education is very important in India, just like in Minnesota and upper Midwest, I should say, all over the place. And there are a lot of exchange of students. I think largest number of students, as I understand, from any country in the United States is from India. And in fact, in this shooting that occurred at Virginia Polytechnic, Virginia Tech, two of the people killed were of Indian origin. So here at our school also, we have a very large number of professors and students who go back and forth. And there's also a very large community now of Indians, and most of them are pretty highly educated. They really respect education, and you'll have a lot of support of them. And so given that so many people are going back and forth anyway, wouldn't it be better to have some kind of a formal arrangement or exchange? That's my hope and my thinking that would be very, very beneficial. But I'll be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Is it Mohan?
Yeah, Mohan. Yeah.
Has there been is there a constituency out there for this? Do you think if there was a match required that that people would step forward to match that $250,000 and that that there is the I guess this initiative would be supported by the Indian community and others here in Minnesota.
Very much so, I think, because there are a lot of companies doing business in India, for example, and there are some Indian companies I understand are even coming here.
There's two of them up in my area.
I see. So So you can see that there is a good possibility of such a private support, and also it could be raised somewhat in India as well. You know, it doesn't have to be all from this side. I mean, just this is my thinking. I can't be, of course, sure.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Professor Moen, are you aware of any activities going on now or in the past of academic exchanges between the university and India?
Well, not probably on a formal basis, but on one-on-one basis, it goes on all the time. Like, for example, I have several students and postdocs from India. And so I think these exchanges do go on. But hopefully with this the center, Senator, it will be more formal in that way and more beneficial, I would say, you know, rather than ad hoc basis that happens at the moment.
Okay, any other questions by the senators on this? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I'll just add too. I know from the Senate's concern, as I mentioned last time, and, you know, if the university is not falling all over themselves for this initiative, you know, while the study language certainly might be appropriate, I would say that the university does make the most sense in terms of any higher education institution in the state that might be willing to look at this opportunity because of its size, its potential, and again, its reputation as a land grant institution. I understand they've got a lot of autonomy, certainly. But yet, as a partner with the state, certainly they, you know, need to take some direction from us as well. And I just think that it is a tremendous opportunity that is going to have a large contingent of private contributions, whether it's from companies or individuals in the Indian community. I think the potential is really there, Mr. Chair.
Senator Michonne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had just a hallway conversation last week with Senator Chaudhry, and I am comfortable with this. Moving forward with something like an India Center, and for me it comes down to timing, especially if we're looking for a match. We're hoping for the private sector to step up. You know, from a timing standpoint, the state's trade mission to India this year, this fall, I think will really gin up some excitement and some attention. And I also appreciate Representative Paulson's point that, you know, maybe it's not the University of Minnesota. If they're not jumping up and down to do something like this, maybe we can find a home somewhere else. And maybe that's not for us to pick a specific site, but I think the general direction to do more with India makes a lot of sense from a workforce standpoint, from a global economy standpoint. And again, timing-wise, this seems like a good year for the state of Minnesota to do it.
What would your idea be if it wasn't the university? And maybe we can have the university come up and talk, but I mean, are you saying like within the Minsky system then?
Maybe we ask for proposals, Mr. Chair.
In our language?
Raise your hand.
An RFP for?
Raise your hand. Who wants to do this? And maybe no one would raise their hand, but I think somebody might.
Okay, that's a good food for thought. Senator Robin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paulson, I'm wondering, I often think when we set up something like this, we need a reciprocal relationship. Is that what you're proposing to develop with some other place in India? I mean, it's one thing to bring people from India here, but if we want to have the full benefit of an exchange, we need to have a place that's going to be on the other end working with us to have people from here go there as well.
Right.
And so I'm wondering what you have in mind for that.
Well, and
Representative Paul.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, two things. One, as I had mentioned last time, you know, the university right now, its School of Public Health, is engaged in activities in India right now with bone marrow transplants and a lot of work on the medical technology side, which makes sense from, you know, the Medtronics and others that have spun out of the university. And I think Professor Moen would also say, and would be happy to answer that question, I think, in specific, he tried to direct me to an area of higher education in Delhi, I believe it was, and I just haven't had enough time to look into the research there, but he has personal connections there as an example of a faculty member at the university right now. He's nodding his head at me right now, but that's an example. I can't remember the name of the facility there.
Indian Institute of Technology.
Indian Institute of Technology, and that, I think, applies more to the area of his field of electrical engineering, where he's more in tune with.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
You know, we're developing a grants office that could manage grants, which is something that if we wanted to put out an RFP, maybe that's the way to go. It would be through that office, and whatever we put up, you know, we could ask for a match and see if somebody wanted to take it. It would be one way to open it up wider to see who was interested in it.
Well, let's see if the university has any comment on this, because I think Senator Pappas at least has been a little concerned whether or not the university supports this idea or doesn't want us to mandate it or whatever. Ms. Peterson, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, Donna Peterson, University of Minnesota. We have at the university an Office of International Studies and International Education, and the China Center is under that, and I know that that's the model that is being looked at, is the China Center. And the China Center is very well developed. It has a very long history at the university of the relationships that the university has established in China in certain locations. And so you have this reciprocal of graduate students recruiting the graduate students, bringing them here, they going back, as well as the China Center has become a core place for industry in this state to use for their building their strengths and knowledge about China and vice versa. So that has a history that's been established. Their budget has been in the range of about $250,000 in state money. They raise privately approximately $60,000, $50,000, somewhere in that range. But then they have about $250,000 that they bring in with the services that they offer, the classes that they offer to external groups. So it has this long history. What we don't have at the university, I am told, is we have just a few relations built right now in India. It's an area that I know our international office wants to do and strengthen. Right now, as Representative Paulson said, the School of Public Health probably has the strongest relationship with India as far as academic relationship. And Frank Serra just led a delegation to India to begin to build the Academic Health Center strength. The component that I know our international studies folks were going to be bringing some people together to begin conversations based on Representative Paulson and Senator Chaudhry's interest, with the hope of once the governor's trip in the fall was completed, we would have, again, more information to build on of sort of how and where we should be building our strengths based on what is it that Minnesota needs. But what we had in the China Center was this strong academic core that we then built into more of a service industry as well. So it's not that we're opposed to strengthening our relationships into India, but to think that we're going to have something comparable to the China Center within a year or 2 years, I think is setting expectations that can't be met. But we're certainly willing to go down this path and begin strengthening those relationships and finding those specific areas. And that is happening. It just may not be happening in the most, it's not certainly not under the guise of a center at this point.
Questions? Ms. Peterson, so you kind of like the concept, but you don't like, either, do you have a problem with the way the language is written?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the issue is I am told that right now your trade office in the state probably has stronger relationships in India than organized kind of relationships than we do at the university, and we're building on that and think we can form a partnership with the Trade Center as well in going forward with this. But to call it a center at this point and think that within a year or 2 years with that amount of money we're going to have something comparable to China, I think that's our concern, is that don't set up an expectation of what's going to happen in 2 years is going to be comparable, because that it will take time to do this and to do it right.
Well, Senator Michelle, I think you bring up a good point with that mission that's going to take place this fall. By the way, do we get to go on that? Somebody negotiate that with the governor's office? But anyway, I think you bring up a very good point that the timing is right, and maybe you're idea to put an RFP for the Indian Center in this bill is something to think about, too. Do you have any comments on that concept? Paulson.
No, and again, Mr. Chair, as I kind of laid the groundwork for some of the for that concept the last time I was before you, I just think that you know, if you do put an RFP out there, it should be for, you know, for a match with private funds. I think those funds are going to be there, and I think you might see some other institutions potentially jump at it a lot quicker than the university. So I, you know, while I understand the trepidation or the caution that the university might have officially on the record, that you know, they also may lose the opportunity, I think, to be the natural driver of the concept, because I think that there's just tremendous potential. In the context I've had from people from Best Buy and other companies about this idea, they've been very, very excited about it, very excited about the concept.
Okay, any other questions or comments on the India Center at all? Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Tim Paulson. Let's see, where were we? We were talking about the tuition and pilot program. Moving on, the Cook County higher ed bump was in both bills. I suppose she should be in here when we're discussing this budget. Unless she just wants to accept everything that I'm doing. And I don't think. Well, we've kind of got it. So I don't, there's, you know, no problem with the Cook County higher ed. The range vocational education is built into the base with some language. I think there will be language on the ability to spend a little bit of first year money on equipment. We have eFolio in here ongoing at 225, which I guess is still a, you know.
The only thing is that the argument was, we've gone back and forth between one time and ongoing, and we just need to have some language about how the money is going to be spent ongoing, since we are only, I was only thinking of it as the equipment upgrade.
Okay. The seabed projects that were in our bill are in here with a new initiative for Inver Hills College.
Mr. Chairman, I thought we did that at 880.
Yeah, we do.
It's 880? Uh-huh. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong line. Okay. This was, the Senate agreed to this because we thought it was important to have a pilot in the Twin Cities area, and Representative Atkins told us that Inver Hills was interested in doing this as well.
We're talking about wind energy. We might want to look at proximity of St. Paul to the capital, because we've got a lot of wind around here. Spin those turbines on a 365-day basis.
This is why we have such a fun weekend, so you're just a joke a minute.
Going on to the one-time money.
I'm a good audience. I laugh at all these stupid jokes.
The Minsky one-time technology money is there at $6.1 million. The textbook agreement is at $500,000. The Senate offered two, we came to five, we reached that. Since the students that have had this initiative are here, have we kind of conceptually agreed on language?
Yeah, I think that they worked out some language.
And I think it's basically the language that you had, the students had worked with Minsky on?
They reworked it with Rep. Simmel.
For the moment.
Oh, yeah, the rider language is fine. Yeah.
Right. That we, I think if everything had been, I thought worked out, maybe the publishing industry isn't that happy with it, but so that's what we're thinking, and the students at Minsky will work on how the pilot's going to work, I guess, and how that money is going to get distributed. The Ford Ranger purchase for retrofitting that pickup truck is in the bill. The high range higher ed study is in the bill, and the one-time money for the women's hockey Division I is also in the bill, and the clean room for St. Paul. And so there we have the one-time money and the ongoing money. Any questions from the committee on that? Any How do you want to do this? Because on the technology, I do want to, I don't know, Ms. King, if you're the right person to bring up at this time, if you would come up.
Talk about the assistant.
You know, we had asked Mr. Oh, there's Mr. Neon. Oh, look at that. What do you want? Sympathy from me with that? What happened, Mr. Neon?
Mr. Chair, you want the short story or the long story?
Short story
is I've got a broken foot. The longer part of it is I actually broke it in December and didn't find out about it until last Tuesday. So,
boy, you're one tough fiddler. You know, you had given this sheet to Senator Pappas, and I think it's attached to the handout.
Yep.
Correct.
Members, you go to the second page after the agenda. And our concern is that we think, at least I do, and I think Senator Pappas and Senator Roebling agree with me on our side, and our members do, that we want your learning process in this to be addressed first for the students, which you did not have. You know, if I look on your list, you've got critical and you've got, you know, 12.7 the biennium on your data center monetization, your identity management for security purposes, and the retooled administrative system and new technology. You know, it takes you to get down six projects before you get to the students, which troubled me somewhat. So I think in our language we will have something directing you to, you know, look at the student services and online learning. Am I going off base?
Place more of a priority,
right,
there.
With that, with both the one-time money. But I guess our question is, what kind of a, being now that we don't have a line spelling out a technology initiative for you, but we will have language in the bill that addresses the 3% for the compensation inflation, and also talks about keeping your tuition under 4% or asking you to keep it under 4%. I don't think we're going to direct you to do that in the language, but we're going to request that you do that. So I guess you have to prioritize then,
right,
on the technology part of it. And we had a long discussion last night, Senator Roebling and Senator Pappas and myself, Senator Atkins was there, about whether we should plug a number in here, and we decided against it, Ms. King. But, you know, I don't want you to spend all your money on technology, and there's still the issue about hiring because,
right,
of the technology and where those hirees should be.
Right.
I think they should be out in the system, but on the campuses. But why don't you tell us,
sure,
conceptually what you're thinking of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And maybe how it relates to this handle.
Thank you. I appreciate your clarification on how to read the spreadsheet, because I was assuming that was your intention, that you would turn to us and ask us to take the conversation we've had with all of you back to our board and sort out how to cover all of the, you know, how to cover 10 chairs with eight ways of doing it. So I appreciate your giving us that ability to have a little dialogue with the board about it. I would expect that the board would continue to place a very high priority on technology. It has been a really, really central concern to the board, and that's why it came to you in this budget request. In fact, we found in going back that we've had a technology request in every biennial budget request that we've submitted since the merger now 11 years ago. So we have struggled continually to find the resources to invest in technology. So I'm sure the board will have that priority when they see the results of your work. They also are going to have a priority on the other initiatives, the access initiative, the focus on allied health services. So they're going to have the same conversation that you've had here about how do we stretch it to cover the highest priorities. They also, I think, would, and we haven't had this conversation with them, but I think they share your interest in getting the technology investment out to where the students can see it, because that's the customer. And so that would be an objective of theirs as well. I will say, though, as I've said to members here individually, that
everything on this worksheet that adds up to $70 million goes to student benefit. Some of it's just not as visible as other parts of it. So we will have a conversation with you if you'd like, and with them certainly, about how to translate your interest in the student seeing the investment into the balance that we have to make sure the infrastructure is solid. And I noticed on the committee's agenda that you included words about funding the infrastructure backbone. So it sounds like you've had that same balancing act in your conversations that I expect we'll have as well.
Well, and as I said, Ms. King and members, it was quite a discussion, I think, last night that we had. And, you know, I just want to be perfectly clear that I understand in looking at your critical urgent sheet here that, you know, network and data center modernization are top of your list. And security, of course, is an issue and everything else. I just don't want you to, you know, buy a Mercedes-Benz to make things easier, for payroll right. or human services, no. and then and not focus on the
that's right.
the D2L type thing
that's right.
and stuff like that.
And that's, that won't be our objective.
That's what we're talking about.
That won't be our objective. We don't have near enough for a Mercedes-Benz. Ken is striving for a Chevy after driving an Edsel for many years.
Mr. Niemi.
58 Chevy?
Uhu Minula. Speak to me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, who's chair? Who's got the gavel today? He does. Okay.
Right here, buddy. Yes, Watch chair. Out for the other
members. in our IT operation, we clearly understand that we have to be able to produce some results that are absolutely visible by faculty and students in particular on that side. We've been looking through this list, and I've actually started some talks with the Office of Enterprise Technology and the University of Minnesota as well to find ways that maybe we can leverage a little bit more than we already are even on that shared common infrastructure. So cut some costs in data center modernization, perhaps even in the security area, by working collaboratively with OET, who's been is very open to this idea of us going forward, and move more of that down the line into those items that the students and the faculty will see directly. And that's certainly part of my commitment as well. I think that's critically important for us. So,
okay. Questions from the committee, comments from the committee. Senator Sharon, you've been somewhat
quiet
and just listening, which is really good for a freshman. I respect you for that. Any comments from you on the concept or members over here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would say that I share your concern, what you're talking about, for the experience at the student and faculty yep. level. The objective to develop online learning and to become modernized in terms of the variety of ways in which we provide education has been pressed on the students and faculty without them having the resources to support them in doing that. And so if we're putting money in technology and it comes around that the money still isn't there to give administrative support or technological support to faculty or trying to put out a course online, that I would be very discouraged by that. And so I just really want to emphasize what we're saying here.
Thank you.
That if it gets spent up at some level up here and the faculty are coming back again saying we're not experiencing any relief here in terms of that support, I'll find that problematic.
Okay.
I appreciate that, Senator Sharon. What shows on the sheet down here towards the bottom in parentheses is the provision for $12 million of the $70 million to be moved directly out to campuses for that very purpose, so that they could identify where the squeakiest wheel is in the technology string. And I would imagine that would give them the ability to respond to that. We'll have to see what that number is as the numbers all settle in, but we share the recognition that part of this funding is a campus service level issue. So I really want to thank the committee for going as far as you've gone with us on this request. We really think it's mission critical, and we're very grateful to you for the support.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
I'm not so pleased. I think that we're really underfunding the higher education system, and I was very disappointed that our target, although real money, was only $30 million above the Senate target, because I really like the House target much better, and I liked a lot of our efforts that we were making to try to hold down tuition. I'm hoping that the conferees will adopt rider language that does provide some direction to MNSCU, that we really want to prioritize the core system, mm-hmm. the inflation, the technology, the access.
Mm-hmm.
And that we feel, although the new initiatives are all important and vital and interesting and exciting, that holding down tuition for us is a higher priority than new initiatives. And that if you feel you need to do new initiatives, then you need to reallocate, discontinue doing some programs, reallocate, or search for increased productivity to do new initiatives. Because in this kind of status quo budget, there really isn't enough money. And I don't want you to continue neglecting the technology needs of the system. And I do agree with Representative Rukavina that, you know, we want to make sure that whatever we're doing, we're serving the students and the faculty, and that we need to be fairly fairly modest. And, you know, I mean, we have to have a basic infrastructure that's workable, but the priority needs to be serving the students and the faculty.
Thank you, ma'am.
But, Senator Roman.
Mr. Chair, as long as we have them, we should ask them about the freeze on the centralized office service, staffing and things, because we were concerned that some of that could be problematic, and we weren't sure if all of it could be brought out to the campuses, the additional services.
Mr. Niemi and Ms. King, do you want to comment on the language that we have?
Mr. Chair, just from a clear, so it's the House language that concerns just the money, the positions related to the technology investment. Okay, let me turn to Ken then to respond to that.
That is problematic for us in putting all those resources of additional ones away from our operation. As we've talked about, I think in some of the testimony before the committee in general, we've balanced close to 50-50 the number of our positions that are opposite the chancellor position, but that are based here in St. Paul and that are based in six other places across the state at a campus level. Yeah, Mankato, Moorhead, Granite Falls, St. Cloud, Bemidji. So we have those other positions that are out there, and our intent moving forward was to maintain that balance for a number of reasons. One is job market. Availability of staff in some places is difficult to do, and with the numbers that we need to do that, we sometimes are tapped out in some of the other markets. On the other hand, it's a great value to have that half of the people that are not based in the metro area to do that. When the market is tight here, it may not be so tight in Moorhead or in Mankato or St. Cloud. So that's a big help for us. But requiring all of them to be in non Twin Cities locations is difficult for us to hit, I'm afraid.
Well, I just want you, Ms. King, to keep in mind what happened on the House floor regarding a concept, I guess, in the House at least, that you are, I don't know how it's put by Representative Pawlowski, but I don't know which largest campus, and you don't educate any students. And I know that's not fair, but it's still, as you may recall, I lost and opposed the amendment and lost. So yep. I don't want to go back and get beat up again and be accused that what I did here is nothing more than putting more jobs at St. Paul that have nothing to do with educating students. And whether that's a fair statement or not, and I see you're counting to 10 as I speak, maybe 20 I'll give you while I keep talking, but whether it's fair or not is not the point. The point is I have to go back with this, and I had put that language in there initially to try to stop what happened on the floor from happening, and I didn't stop it. So take that as you may want to take it, but I got to live with that too.
Sure,
the House floor.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I understand exactly that circumstance. The balancing act for us is that the work that gets done is different in different parts of the state, and the work that this initiative calls for is perhaps different than the work that was done last year. So it's not like we just move trucks around and balance it that way.
I appreciate the dynamic of the House position. If it would be acceptable to the chair, we'd be willing, rather than having the language, to simply come back and tell you when we get done balancing all this, not knowing how all of the money's going to settle. We'd be happy to come back and tell you next year what we did. But at this point, blind, it's difficult for us, without impacting what we're able to get done for students and faculty, to make that kind of a promise. That's our concern to you, is that we'll make not the best possible decisions because we're worried about headcount being in the right part of the state.
You know, Madam Senator Pappas, I'm not giving in to you totally on this issue yet, because I think there were concerns on the House side when you came in with this proposal, Mr. Namy, and I think I'm not mistaken when I recall that there were like 70 positions also tied with your FTEs, tied with your $70 million of technology money, and we don't want to see whether you come up with you know, a $10 or $20 million or $10 million ongoing for use of technology, whatever you decide. We'll give you the discretion to decide, other than the one-time money. We don't want to see 20 positions or, you know what I'm saying?
I think I know what you're saying. You don't want to see 20 positions created in Greater Minnesota and 50 in the Twin Cities in our central office. Is that what you're saying?
Well, and I don't want to see, I don't know. I hope $20 million, if that's the number you pick, or $10 million, doesn't mean prorated the same amount of FTEs as you were projecting for the $70 million. I don't understand why it has to be that way, but maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe you have to have a person for so much being spent on tech job, not a new person for that. So,
Mr. Chair, yeah, a lot of these, we have options on some of these. As you're looking at converting, you can bring in consultants and contractors to do the work, or you can hire MAPE staff to do the bulk of the work. I mean, most of these people doing this work are MAPE staff. They're programmers, they're systems analysts, they're support staff that are there. My preference is you only use consultants where they're essential for getting a short-term job done, and they have skill set that we probably don't have otherwise, or we can't hire because the state doesn't pay enough. On ongoing support, in that, I would much rather be able to hire our own staff that are state employees that are performing these services on an ongoing basis because they have an interest. We don't have to retrain them over and over again. So there's a mix. But my preference is always to hire the staff because they're invested in making the system better overall.
Comments from the members? Maybe Senator Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many staff people, say that we do end up with, you know, 7 million or so of one time, and then you take another 7-8 million, how many staff people would that translate to? I mean, obviously some of it's the hardware and the software, and how many people?
Senator, Mr. Chair, we don't really know at this point because we don't know what our end number is going to be, because the board will decide how many resources are allocated out toward this as we go ahead. In the full package, Our planning estimates were 70 additional staff to do the conversions, to do the data center changes, to do the network management, to do the student and faculty support activities that were there. So that's where we started with that 70. If it's whatever number it is, it's not necessarily proportional to that. We'd have to kind of rethink that as to how that moves ahead. But 70 was the number that we'd start out with on the full funding of the entire package, and obviously we're not going to make that full funding, and it would be my guess. So dependent on what the board does in allocating out the budget dollars, we'd have to revisit that number.
Just a point of clarification on the 70 FTEs that you're describing, that also includes individuals that you would contract with, so you're not necessarily talking about 70 FTEs per year. It's just you need essentially 70 individual to perform some task at some given time?
Representative Welty, Mr. Chair. The 70 were positions that would go into the supporting the ongoing system as it went. Contractors, numbers, who knows what contractors bring in. If you want to do a year's worth of work in 3 months, you know, it's five times the people to do that. So that would be outside of that number, and that was in this full package. That included all kinds of levels of support, trainers, all the stuff that we've really given short shrift over the last, or at least the last 7-8 years, probably longer than that, frankly.
Other questions then? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just moving on the spreadsheet then to the university. As you can see, the conference for ongoing is $134.5 million approximately, with the ongoing additions, the Dakota language, which we'll have Rider Language dealing with that, and that's going to the university now instead of OHE. And we'll have that language that addresses the Ojibwe program, too. The Ag Special is there.
Can I say something?
Okay. And the, well, I'm sure it's involved. But as you can see, in the Ag Special, we've got the $3.1 million. Go ahead, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Ag Special language in the House was very confusing to me, and I even called Representative Welty over the weekend to kind of help figure it out. But one thing is the amendment that was added in the House Finance Committee for the $800,000 for NISA for renewable energy. I know that in the conference committee from the Joint Environment Committees, they have $10 million going to IRE for renewable energy projects. So I don't feel like we need to fund that. They sound like they're adequately funded. But I know that your initiative that you came in with from the Ag Committee was originally $8 million. And the House put in, I think, $2 million plus $1 million in uptime and one time. So I suggested to the House conferees that we move that $800,000 into the other projects, because there's plenty of stuff to do there. And so that's how we ended up with a much higher target than originally.
And Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Rukavina, Senator Pappas. I am pleased by what I see here. I think that was the right move to make. And as I look through the language, I look through the dollars and how they're allocated in this, I think that we're going to have a good Ag Special moving out of this.
So Representative Welty, and then you understand that the reference you had to the initiative dealing with energy and switchgrass and...
That will not be a part of the language. We did not move that over, as I understand.
Okay. So you're working with Ms. Novak then on the other language that deals with NISA on that. That's
maybe,
still going to stay in the
bill. It may be okay.
It should be okay.
Or is everything we have now?
It should be okay. But I'll just review that with Ms. Novak to make sure it works.
And I think the university has said it's okay with them, and I think we want to also make sure the land stewardship project is satisfied. I'll go.
Okay.
We'll try.
And we're probably going to have a discussion about all this writing language amongst ourselves, too. Are you going into session in 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll quickly go through this. The tuition banding, I think we all understand that, and that will be there ongoing. The scholarship matching the university, we did it more heavily in the second year, and you understand about the 1.5-to-1 match. And I think we will have language in there that talks about that and also talks about what type of student you're aiming this at, and I think language maybe up to $150,000 of income like we had talked about. And you're okay with that, then they're nodding their heads over there. Fitz gave us a thumbs up on that. So and of course we will have language that this is just for Minnesota residents too. Okay. The labor education, we met halfway in between. The one-time money on the Ag Special, the $1 million of one-time money, the transportation study requested by Representative Hartman, that was in our bill. We're still, I guess, up in the air on the India Center. And the Mayo Partnership is in there. The one-time money we just gave in the first year to decide how to use that, and then the $8 million of ongoing money will be in the tails. It's up there on the on line 42. And then the neighborhood planning money that, with the language that was in the House bill. And so, does the university have any questions or comments on what's here? Mr. Fitzenritter, Mr. Zetterberg, does anybody want to come forward with any questions on that?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I just want to make my speech.
We'll let you make your speech, and just let me say one thing. We're also going to have the 3% language. Will be somewhere that will also be directed towards you, just so you know that that's the compensation inflation item. And I think a little language that asks you to keep your tuition and maybe do reallocation or whatever at the 4.5 and 4.5, just like we're asking the Minsius system to do, realizing, of course, that you didn't get your full dollar amount, but also realizing the, you know, and I wish we would have gotten a Senate dollar amount, I mean, a House dollar amount, but we didn't. But the tuition is still a concern to us and to our leadership. And I think Senator Pogemiller made that perfectly clear to us that he hopes that we give you some direction on that tuition not going up above what you had specified in your presentation. So with that,
Mr. Chairman,
I don't know if I...
You took my speech.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I'll repeat it.
Go ahead.
Thanks.
I'm sorry.
Mr.
I didn't know that.
Mr. Chairman, it's the same, really the same perspective, is that we feel like we've grossly underfunded the university. I feel that way. And, but given this is all the money we have in our status quo budget, we suggest that you focus on compensation, advancing education, and technology infrastructure, and that's the core funding of the institution, and that tuition, holding down tuition, be given a higher priority than new initiatives. As much as the new initiatives are important, we think that given the limited budget, that new initiatives need to be funded with reallocation and increased productivity. That's our recommendation.
I do want to point out before we move on that the dollar amounts on the ongoing, if you look, are fairly similar, although Minsky gets, I guess, for lack of a better word, shortchanged a little bit, which I apologize because you did at one time have those numbers fairly even. And then I guess when we made our final budget item, we did shore up the ag stuff in that a little bit, so it ended up being a little different. But I think it's fair. It's better than what's happened around here for years, so.
Well, you have quite a bit of money for scholarships.
Which is good. And so finally, the last page dealing with the Office of Higher Education and the one-time money there. And yeah, did we pass this out?
Oh, it's
the state grant sheet, and what we're thinking of doing is here. I think you see a deal is written on it, that, for lack of a better word, this is the deal we reached last night. So we also have the one-time money for OHE here with the Washington internship, the Oxford step-up program. Minitex is funded at $2 million above their base. The TEACH program is a scholarship program and one-time money.
I thought that was, no, we put that in the base.
Where is it up above? Okay, yeah, we lowered, yeah. excuse me, we did it at 500,000 instead of a million. Representative Blyba, we made it ongoing in a scholarship program. So we just have the Augsburg and Washington on one time, and the Achieve, we had that discussion as far as what we're going to come up with language. We'll have that for Ms. Egar to take a look at. And then the GI bill, we've got the number that they, I wasn't at that meeting, I think I was in Senator Thomasoni and Representative Murphy's conference committee when they came forward with the 5 and 5 proposal with some language. So we do have the language, which I believe includes everything we agreed to, and we chose to not fund the upper division graduate.
Do you have that language?
Well, yeah, why don't we pass that out? And we also, what can we do a motion here on things that we've agreed to in the side-by-side before you take out?
Oh, okay, yeah. Not the spreadsheet.
No.
Do you want to go to the side-by-side or the GI bill?
Well, why don't we just pass the GI bill language?
Let people know better. Better.
Yeah.
So is that the side by side?
Yeah. If we go on the side by side, members.
We have to 11:15.
Yeah. Let's look at page R30 and R32, which I think deals with your funding policy. And if we agree on from 30 to 32 on Senate sections 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then incorporate House Section 6, which I don't know what page is on R31. That would be our proposal. I think that's what we agreed upon. Does staff understand what I just said? Okay. Does the conference committee understand what I just said? We're sorry, we don't have all the seven of them to remember. Representative McFarland.
I'm just wondering, I thought the Senate position had a subtraction for National Guard. Has that been pulled out?
Yes. The National Guard item's been pulled out and left alone.
Okay.
Okay. Any questions on this motion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. On the financial management on page R34, we'll accept the Senate language, which we discussed. Section 8. Any questions on that?
I'm with that.
Senator Pappas moves Section 8, page 34 on the side-by-side. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The senior citizen language, I think, which was in both bills, but I don't know, on R35, we'll take House Section 12. This is the railroad retiree language, which we both agree to, which is, I think, an insignificant amount of people. Senator Baptist moves the House Section 12. Any questions on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. And finally, on R40.
Do you want to do the credit card?
Yeah. We can do that. We'll get something.
It needs to be.
Do we have language to correct the credit card? Why don't we wait until the language is here? That's why we didn't. Why don't we wait?
It's just a worry, but we can wait.
Okay, and then finally on R40 is the Senate language dealing with the LME continuation on the surplus appropriation section. Senator Pappas moves the Section 21 on page R40, which is the Senate language.
Okay.
Any questions on that? We had a discussion on that. And there's no problem with the governor's office or Department of Finance. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Two more years, Jane.
And then, has everyone gotten a chance to look at the 826 amendment regarding the GI Bill?
Should we talk about the outlines of it?
I think, members, this is what was discussed by both the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Guard and the Adjutant General. Is the language in here dealing with the transfer to the Department of Veterans Affairs of the money?
Mr. Chair, the money under this proposal will be appropriated directly to the Department of Veterans Affairs in the bill and not
connected. Directly appropriated?
Correct.
Does OHE understand that?
And you have
Ms. Hegar?
Mr. Chair and members, our office does understand that our goal then would be to develop a significant, substantial interagency agreement that lays out the responsibilities for both departments so we can properly facilitate the program.
The interagency agreement is in here, Dennis.
There is permissive language, Mr. Chair. Under the duties of the commissioner on page 2, line 2.17, at the very end it begins.
Ms. Hegar, do you see that language there?
Tell me the lines again.
Line
I'm sorry.
2.17, begins there through the end of 2.19.
Yeah.
The commissioner may execute an interagency agreement with the OHE for services the commissioner determines necessary.
I think, Mr. Chair, I think that would be to our satisfaction. I need it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
I also wanted to mention that we did move up the date. Do you want to point out the date?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, under the eligibility section, there are a series of dates that were August 2nd of 1990, I believe, and those dates have all been changed to September 11th, 2001.
And that was also agreed on when I was missing from that meeting by Veteran Department of Veterans Affairs and the Adjutant General.
We're not 100% sure they agree to it.
Oh, okay.
So they want to comment.
Ms. Hegar?
I missed that last comment, but Mr. Chair, one thing we'd want to just be clear on, I think we'd requested some administrative money, or I think it would now be Veterans Affairs had requested some administrative money. I don't know if they're here today, but I did want to at least just ask the question whether the administrative work on this bill could come out of the overall appropriation. It's not a significant amount of money. Is that allowable under the language?
I don't know if we specifically addressed that, but I'm assuming.
Is it allowable?
Yeah.
In the rider language, there will be that language.
Okay.
And,
we're still waiting for the Department of Finance to tell us whether or not the amount is the same for the Veterans Affairs.
The administrative percentage? Finance is going to indicate to us whether the percentage for the administrative purposes is the same at Veterans Affairs as it is for OHE.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, the rationale for this is that the Department of Veterans Affairs already has the tuition reimbursement program for the National Guard, and we thought it would be important to have all the tuition programs in one agency for purposes of keeping track of accountability. We didn't really think that it was a good idea to have same or similar programs funded by different agencies. We need to see it all together. And then, quite frankly, we also feel that this will not be in direct competition with funding we want to do from in higher education by not having it in our base, putting it in veterans, the base of Veterans Affairs.
Ms. Hegar, comment?
My understanding is this is satisfactory. I need to double check again, with the governor's office, but I think that some very good work has been done, and I think as long as there's an interagency agreement, because we do all the state grant stuff, and that's a big part of how you calculate the benefit, I think this should be good. I know that there were some concerns about still leaving out the graduate students, but my understanding is that this proposal is satisfactory. The only other thing I just wanted to ask is, will I have another opportunity to address the members, address you this afternoon on other provisions in the bill?
Yes, we will be coming back here and making motions with language that people can actually see the actual language.
I just liked on the governor's behalf to be able to make some general statements about the bill. Some will be specific, actually, but I'd like to have a chance to do that later on today.
Well, Ms. Hegard, we're hoping to get the new achieved language to you shortly.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we have the 826 amendment in front of us then. Any further questions on it? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Do we have any other language we can do on the side-by-side that we need to do, or amendments? Okay. we have an amendment. Is this passed out? Pass out the 824 amendment. Has it been passed out? Okay, this is the language dealing with the program we discussed on the trial program on the $20 million bond initiative. Did Minsky, OHE see this? Okay, any questions from members? Senator Pappas moves the 824 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Let's have a little discussion then on the language dealing with the Legislative Commission on post-secondary funding. Mr. Russ, do you want to come up and talk about, since this was your initiative, what you hope we do on this, and Senator Pappas has got some other suggestions. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Senator.
Mr. Chair, members of the conference committee, my name's Russ Stanton. I represent the inter-faculty organization, State University Faculty Unions. We did support this idea of a commission. Basically, about every 10 or 12 years, the legislature has had some sort of a task force to kind of step back and look at how we fund higher education in Minnesota. And we had one in 1983 where they devised kind of the basics of our current financial aid system and came up with what was then called the average cost funding formula. Then again, in the early 90s, we had another task force that devised the institutional funding formula, which is basically the student pays one-third, the state was to pay two-thirds. They took into account inflation, enrollment, marginal cost funding. Basically, we thought that that was a pretty good formula for the time because it did take into account the really basic cost drivers, the things that cost higher education, and it provided a rational basis for coming up with how much money do you need for higher education. Now, no funding formula can ever bind the legislature. I mean, it just gives you the starting number. But it can provide a rational basis, and it can incorporate policy decisions, like how much should students pay, how much should the public pay for higher education, and so forth. Basically, the funding formula that was devised in the 1990s worked pretty well up until about, maybe 6 years ago. And then at that point, we just started ignoring it. The state share started falling a lot below 67%. And finally, we started repealing parts of it. A few years ago, they repealed the enrollment portion of the funding formula. And frankly, I think we're about the only state in the union that doesn't take enrollment into account when they decide how much money to appropriate for higher education. Basically, we think it's time for the legislature to step back. Also, we think it should be comprehensive. The financial aid formula, as we now know it, has been around for a long time. And frankly, it's been twisted and pulled by constituency forces a lot over the years. And there's lots of things in that formula that I don't think make good rational sense. I don't think the LME, my observation sitting here watching over the years is that the LME tended to be viewed as a way of fairly distributing the money. and there was less attention to things like what are the true costs of students living in miscellaneous expenses and how do they vary and so forth. So we think that it would be a good time to take a look at it. Also, there's been a lot has transpired in the environment over the last decade. Federal Pell Grants have been increased several times. We had the creation of the HOPE Scholarship at the state, at the federal level, the lifetime learning credit, et cetera. And all of those changes not only change the amount of resources available to students, but they change the formula. In addition, we've had an explosion of internet education. We should be looking at how that should be funded. We're more global than we used to be. We should be looking at our resident tuition policies and so forth. And so we thought it would be a good time to start with a blank piece of paper and say, if we were to do it now, what would we do? And we think that everything should be on the table in this debate. One of the big debates over the last decade is, should money follow students or should it flow through institutions? We think that's a fair debate, should be on the table. What percent should the students pay? What percent should the state pay? We think that's a fair debate, should be on the table. And so that was our motivation. And our belief is that the best people to do that are the legislature. We know we had had consultants, we know we had the Citizens League do reports, but you folks have gone out and got election certificates. You've talked to the people of Minnesota, and when you devise a funding formula, it isn't just a mechanical process. Incorporated in there are values, and nobody better represents the values of the people of Minnesota than you folks. And so that's why we thought that the legislature should do it. We're not hung up that it has to be a commission. I guess the reason why we came up with that idea was that's how it was done in the past. It could be a legislative subcommittees or joint committees, whatever. But we think the time has come to take a fresh look at this. And actually, it could be, a pretty exciting process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you. Two questions, Mr. Stanton. The Senate did not have this bill, and we have a kind of a more complicated process in that legislators or legislative commissions, legislators serving on boards, have to be approved by the Rules Committee. Mm-hmm. I think there is probably some attempt to so that the leadership knows what their appointments sure. are, and also to kind of slow down the constant appointing of legislators to a lot of things. So we thought maybe we could have some joint hearings over the interim and look at this issue. And it'll be a short session next year. We could have some time, even in January and February, to spend on this.
We still might be here working on this year's budget.
I do know how we're going to do.
So
big picture.
But Mr. Stanton, and maybe you and I had just a miscommunication, because your letter that you sent was very thoughtful and was very good, and it talked about all the rationale. And we agree in many cases. We have the Office of Higher Education doing a study on the state grant program. We think we do need to look at the parameters of that program. But I just was a little nervous that there was some hidden agenda about dismantling MNSCU and having legislative direct funding to the campuses.
I think a funding formula does. They do different things in different states, depending on how they have it. One of the main functions of funding formula is to come up with how much money is necessary, and that's what our present formula did. A second purpose of a funding formula is to allocate that money out. And, there is a question of, I think, that should be debated, of how much of a role should the legislature play in that. I mean, right now, basically, what you have is a block grant system. You give a block grant to MNSCU and the University of Minnesota, and you come back a couple years later and say, what did you do with it? How much more do you need? kind of thing. There's also the approach of, for instance, what you do with K-12. 30 years ago, I sat on the K-12 committee, and we had a formula that said, this is how we allocate money to the school districts. I mean, as I recall, the money went to the Department of Education, who actually sent out the checks, but the formula of how the money went out was actually decided by legislators. And when I voted, I kind of had some idea how much was going to come back to Lincoln and Lyon County school districts, you know, via that formula. Our present system for higher education doesn't have anything like that. And I think it's worth discussion. I think you kind of, the House kind of started down that road a little bit when they said the system office gets to keep this much and the rest has to go to the campuses. But, you know, we probably disagree. I'm sure you and I disagree on, you know, how detailed the legislature should be. But I think it's a discussion worth having as to how you really do, as elected officials, make sure that the resources get allocated according to the way the people of Minnesota want.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Stanton, I think more information to the legislature. I'm thinking of the bonding bill. We typically know what projects are going to be funded, and we also, I've encouraged Ms. Hugh to give us a kind of a HEPRA list as well, so legislators know the priority to their campuses. And in the Senate, at least, we've kind of respected the process that Minsky was gone through and prioritizing and choosing. And, you know, campuses basically have to get in line. And they jump the line if they have a critical need, perhaps. But basically, they have to wait if it's a new science building until it's their turn. So, I mean, I think there is a process there. Legislators generally know if they're, mm-hmm. you know, how far down the list before you get to their district, so that their district's school. But, you know, I don't mind knowing, you know, what Minsky is sending to the campus, but I'm a little nervous about the legislature being directly involved.
Sure.
Not more than a little nervous.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because I think it really would balkanize our system. Instead of having one system, you're going to have each legislator advocating for their own college and their district, and we're not looking, you know, our students in my district don't all go to St. Paul College. I mean, they go to the university, they go to St. Paul State, they go to Duluth, they go all over, you know. So if we want to serve students, we want the whole system to be strong.
Sure. Well, Madam Chair, first of all, being a Greek, I resent the fact that you use balkanization.
Derogatory term?
I think so.
Why
take it that way?
Politically correct term.
You have to have some cultural sensitivity. I think in our hearings, and I believe it was one of Mr. Nelson's members from the Minnesota College Faculty Association that brought up the old way of funding, which was basically a Minnesota miracle type thing where campuses got money in that, and I realize that whole system's changed. But still, you know, it's easier to put money on the tuition in a larger system, whether it's a Mankato or a Metro State, than it is in a Rainy River Community College or whatever system. So I think we need to do something, and I know it's late now and you've got some concerns about this, so I'm taking you at your word as far as having some hearings on this whole issue. I guess we'll just not address this issue other than to have you publicly say that we're going to have some hearings.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stanton, while you're there, there seems to be some confusion about this competitive compensation language. I don't know if Mr. Cheetah is here or not, or if he's had a chance to talk to you.
Yes. I was told that that might come up, and I have something I want to hand out, if that's okay.
Okay.
Representative Bryan.
Before we switch topics, Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, I'd just like to comment on the issue of the potential for a funding formula that might parallel K-12. You had expressed some concern that it might put representatives and senators in a position of advocating for their own district over others. But I don't think it needs to any more than the K-12 formula, which is meant to give some objectivity to the process and look at a variety of factors that are a rational part of what's necessary to fund a system, including student population. And I think it's a fair discussion whether we should be looking at numbers when we're funding higher ed. And I guess I have some concern, especially because we had discussed adopting the Senate language and making the 67% a goal rather than its current status as the target or whatever. And I think if we don't aggressively look at formula, we're backing off of our commitment as a state. So I see these two things as related. But that's just a comment. It doesn't mean that we can't move forward in a way that would look. I just don't want to minimize the seriousness of the discussion of both the formula and the state's responsibility for a fair share funding.
And I think, members, that you bring up, Mr. Staten, on this handout?
Yes. For the benefit of new members of the conference committee that haven't been on the committee before, last session, the legislature adopted when they 2 years ago when they appropriated. In the higher ed bill, there was two riders, which I've highlighted on the handout, dealing with competitive compensation. The one for MNSCU appropriated $12 million to pay competitive compensation to faculty and staff for initiatives that promote excellence in student learning. And the one for the University of Minnesota was for $13 million for competitive compensation to enable the university to attract and retain quality faculty members. History behind the MNSCU appropriation, we had some concerns for some time that our compensation, faculty salaries, were not keeping pace with peer institutions across the nation, which was a great concern because we recruit nationally for faculty. Most of our faculty come from other parts of the state. And to kind of clarify the discussion here, I want to draw a distinction between competitive compensation, which means staying abreast of the marketplace of your peers, versus performance pay, which basically usually involves, it can take a million forms, but it usually involves setting some goal and you get the money if you achieve the goal. What happened when we did the study, and I was one of the staff, I staffed it for the faculty. When we did the study, it was half administrators, half faculty. We basically recognized that, you know, back in the middle of the 80s, we used to be in the 80th percentile in pay among peer institutions, which meant basically that it was a pretty good position to be because the market was only 20% picked over by better paying institutions before we were able to hire, and so we were able to hire some really good people. What started to happen, however, is that began to slip, and back in 2005 when we did the study, we were between the 50th and 60th percentiles in compared to peer institutions, we were falling fast in terms of compensation. Following that, they began to prepare the budget, and there was a line item put in by MNSCU, not at our request, for competitive compensation. And if you look at the documents that were submitted, it was supposed to be general across-the-board increases plus some incentive pay. Through the legislative process, that continued to get morphed more and more away from competitive compensation and more into what you might call performance pay. And what ended up in the conference committee was this language that basically said for initiatives that promote excellence in student learning. Now, that was pretty vague language. It said competitive compensation, which we interpreted as market-based, but for initiatives that promote excellence in student learning. Following the session, MNSCU came to bargaining with very specific ideas of what the legislative intent was for this, and they basically proposed systems where they would give a competitive grant system for people to do various little projects. And basically, we said the grants are not a bad idea to you know, do these little projects. However, they're not a substitute for competitive compensation. They're not going to be what attract and retain faculty. You need real salary that you can pay a mortgage with, that you can buy groceries with, and that's what we were talking about. We basically did not agree in collective bargaining to this. And after collective bargaining was over, Minsky basically came back and essentially said, we're going to start this grant system. Anyhow, we objected. We hired an attorney. Basically, our attorney said, you can go through a long lawsuit, but basically they'll tell you, go back and bargain in good faith. So we pretty much dropped this, and they did, in fact, use the money to basically give a couple of grants at each campus for these projects. Our feeling is that this money would be much better spent. Our problem is that we have trouble attracting and retaining faculty. We feel this money could be much better spent the way the University of Minnesota appropriation was, which was to attract and retain faculty. And it'd be more meaningful. So basically, we suggested that, by the way, what happened was last session, this was base money. It was $12 million of ongoing money.
Right.
The grants were one-time grants. And basically, so that money is still in the base, that $12 million. And we felt that it would be better to go back to the original intent and reassign that money to be used to attract and retain faculty rather than these little performance grants.
Okay, Mr. Stanton. I have to interrupt because we have to move on here.
Sure.
But stay there. Okay, now I'm getting conflicting information on this. In the Senate bill, we did go with the IFO suggestion to mirror the language that was in the University of Minnesota, because that was my understanding, is the intent was to be able to attract in the marketplace faculty in areas where the private sector was paying higher salaries. However, it's my understanding that the two-year colleges have adopted the other approach, the grant-making approach, in their contract. And that, and Mr. Nelson, you need to correct me if I'm wrong, is that that seems to be working well in the two-year colleges. And then, Mr. Stanton, I was also told that when IFO was presented with the opportunity in the contract to adopt language for competitive compensation to attract and retain quality faculty members, that was rejected. So I'm very confused about what I really don't like getting involved in what you're negotiating. So I think it's better for us to have language that's more neutral so that you can go ahead and negotiate what it is you want to do.
I always say we don't get paid enough money to be business agents because they make a lot more money.
Right.
Mr. Nelson, do you want to comment on that first?
Right.
Do you want
you mean
to
about
comment
how
on
much
question?
Money you make?
Yeah.
Representative Rukavina, Senator Pappas, we did agree contractually in the bargaining process to do the grant awards of excellence. However, we concur with the IFO that the competitive to recruit and retain was what we felt was the legislative intent of that money, that it basically right now it's not used to recruit any new member because they can't apply or they can't put it on a salary schedule because they're not there.
And Mr. Stanton, in my office, we did discuss this.
Yes.
About the ability of hiring people at a higher rate on the salary schedule, and then they get increases along with everyone else. But in order to attract people, you sometimes have to start them, like nurse educators, at a higher rate.
Yes. Madam Chair, we do recognize in our contract that you can't pay everybody the same rate, that the competition, market competition, for instance, for people in areas like finance and accounting and some of the IT places and so forth, our starting step isn't adequate to attract good people. And basically, we negotiated a number, this is quite some time ago, the ability for when new hires are hired, they can be brought in anywhere on the salary schedule, from the bottom step clear up to the top step if they wish. And in fact, we do have faculty that start anywhere from $43,000 up to $78,000, I think it was last year.
So you have that in your contract?
Yes, and basically you'll find that the salaries in the competitive fields are considerably higher than the salaries in the non-competitive fields. And I guess in terms of your comment about being neutral, that's always been our position. We never did support the idea of having a line item in the budget because it prescribes negotiations. We would much prefer to just simply give the money in terms of inflation or whatever and then let the bargaining process determine how it gets determined. But unfortunately, what happened was this language was used to kind of prescribe the bargaining process. And a lot of intent was read into it.
Mr. Cheetah, I can't remember if my conversation was with you or with King.
Mr. Nelson, thank you. And I don't know, Mr. Stanton, if you want to stay there.
Yeah.
Mr. Nelson, I think we're done with you. If you want to go back.
Stay there.
But if you want to stay, that's fine too, right? You could sing Traveling Man for us.
Mr. Cheetah, I'm sorry, my weekend is a blur. I know I talked to Ms. King, and I think I talked to you too. And what's our disagreement here, and what should we do?
Madam Chair, my name's Bill Cheetah. I'm the Vice Chancellor of Human Resources for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I don't see any problem with the language that was in the rider 2 years ago. And I think one of the things we did negotiate language in two of our three collective bargaining agreements that spent that money through a program that you heard described up here. And I think if you talk to Linda Bear, she would say that we've developed a lot of innovative academic-related programs that people have been rewarded for over the year and a half that we've been able to implement that. We have those programs in the collective bargaining agreements. They are one-time grants, but we are committed to continue to fund those programs. So one concern I would have is if we change the language, whether we would still be able to continue to fund those programs.
New initiatives to keep
funding the program as it goes forward. And basically, there's a lot of ways that you spend money to recruit and retain outstanding faculty. And our priorities in bargaining reflect the priorities established by our board with the money that we have available. So we just don't think that there's any need to have this language in there.
Ms. Black?
First, Representative Welty, you wanted to jump into this earlier. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the two testifiers at the table right now, I know there is growing resentment at institution that I represent because we have faculty within the same area that we have new faculty coming in and being hired at a rate higher than the current faculty who've been teaching there 10 or 15 years. And so by what you're telling me, you don't want this prescribed in the process, the bargaining process. So what should my response be to these faculty when they're asking me to come up with the funding or to provide something within the legislature to get to compensation adjustment of some sort, and you don't want it in there?
Mr. Gina?
Okay. Chair Rapavina, Representative Welty, we have processes in both of our collective bargaining agreements, more formally in the IFO agreement, where we periodically do faculty equity studies to address inequities that develop over time, and very often they develop because of what you just described. On the two-year side, we tend to negotiate specific solutions to those kinds of problems over time, but it is a difficult problem to deal with because to bring all the salaries up to the new market rates is an extremely expensive proposition.
Representative,
welcome. You're
talking about Rochester Community College?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Glatt, do you want to come up and comment?
Welcome.
For the record, my name is Nancy Black. I'm president of the Interfaculty Organization, and I'm a member of the Metropolitan State University faculty for the last 15 years. I think when we're talking about these different unions and we're talking about this different application, you have to realize that just as Mr. Stanton said, we recruit nationally for the very best. You have given us the authority now to have applied doctoral programs to meet the state's needs. We need money to attract people. And when at one of our campuses, the latest data reveal that we are below the 40th percentile of peer institutions in the nation, that makes it quite difficult. And I know that Mr. Chita has provided data about failed searches. Last year, we only had 20% failed searches. In other years, it's been higher. We do have flexibility within our bargaining for salaries, and the market shows that. And I can just tell you that as an anthropologist, last year, after 15 years, my salary was the same as a first-year finance professor without a PhD who was a fixed term. So there is flexibility for market demand.
Inequity. members, you know, I think the discussion really is, in the Senate on page R9, is language that would change this provision to mirror what we did for the University of Minnesota. So the discussion is it a higher priority for us that $12 million in the base be used to recruit and retain quality faculty, as actually I believe it was intended to, or is it a priority for us to do what Hominsky has implemented it, and I think the language supports that, is to have a competitive grant situation where faculties submit proposals for new and innovative course ideas. I don't know if that's quite accurate, but something like that, and then they get $3,000 or whatever to do, you know, over and above their salary for them to develop these ideas and these courses. And that seems like that's really important in terms of improving the quality of education. And I don't know if that should be considered part of, you know, permanent faculty duty or not, that they should always be evolving their courses and suggesting new courses, or if there's room in the bargaining process for that to be included. So that's really the basic decision here is, you know, or in order not to implement, you know, perhaps systems that are working well, I mean, we could do an or. We could add that the money could be used for either recruiting or retaining quality faculty or for initiatives that promote excellence in student learning. Then it could be resolved, and I think it could be resolved then in the bargaining process, which is considered more important.
Well, Madam Chair, for me as a newcomer jumping in here, not knowing what went on, you know, 2 years ago, I guess it begs the question, you know, how the university arrived at their interpretation of what you were trying to do versus competitive compensation.
I think, Mr. Chairman, this might be university language, and this might be governor's language from Institute.
But what I'm trying to say is you obviously gave some direction on the conference committee or wherever last 2 years ago, and the direction was, at least as the EU interpreted it, that this was to be used for what competitive compensation, the concept of competitive compensation, which I think Mr. Stanton articulated was fairly well. I thought he did a good job of it versus what Minsky interpreted what competitive compensation should be. So, which I think is not really, maybe you did address that in committee. I feel comfortable with the Senate language. I think Mr. Stanton has made his point, but then is Mr. Chita, is the system concerned that they can't continue to meet their obligation? I don't know with the old money, you know.
They can't continue to fund new grants. The old ones are very specified.
I mean, and if Mr. Chita, your grant process then, as you had it, was a competitive grant process, which, if we adopt the language, is just not there anymore, right? It's not that we're putting you in a financial bind. It's just that from this point forward, that option isn't there.
But you still have the money to use to
$12 million,
retain faculty.
Right.
If you have to, you know, if there's this issue of a shortage because you're not able to offer competitive salaries, you would be able to do that.
Mr. Cheetah, if we adopt the Senate language, you can live with this then?
Representative Rukavina, again, the concern was that we would not be able to continue to fund the program. I was also concerned about the use of the term across the board. And it's not in the language, but it was in the testimony about what they thought the money should have been used for last time. I think it needs to be used specifically to target those areas where the board feels we have to do something.
Mr. Cheetah, the language says must be used only to recruit or retain quality faculty. I'm on page R9.
Mr. Cheetah, you have a comment on that?
Well, I just think that what would allow us to continue the program we have and negotiate new and different programs would be the suggestion of the OR that would allow us to do both, and then we wouldn't have to worry about the current programs that I know Vice Chancellor Baer thinks have been very successful.
Well, Mr. Cheetah, they're one-time grants. So, you mean the one-time grants, the money's already out the window. It just means that if you wanted to continue it, you'd have to use other money to continue
the reality. But the $12 million from this point forward then, and next year, starting in next year's fiscal year, is going towards the concept of competitive compensation. Mr. Stan, do you?
I want to clarify in the discussion. We don't think that these innovation grants were a bad idea. I mean, actually, they're a good idea, but we just think they should have been funded out of somewhere other than the competitive compensation. And the system office does have, if you've ever seen their green sheet, they have pots of money dealing with initiatives, you know, for board chancellor and board initiatives and so forth. And if they think that these kind of innovations are necessary, you know, reallocation isn't, I mean, that's kind of how the system was originally designed to be. So,
Got it. Senator Rowland, did you have a question on this?
Well, Mr. Chair, I am just wondering how we arrived at amounts for how much was needed for it. You know, we did hear quite a bit of testimony that some positions were hard to fill because the wages weren't high enough. And so the university in particular were the ones talking about that, and that's why we gave them the language we did. But I just don't know. In Minsku, it would seem to me it would be the 4 years that would have the most struggles maybe filling positions. And I don't know if we should treat them differently. Maybe we should be treating them differently because we want to address a problem that exists, not. And so if the 2 years don't have that problem, I don't know if they'll need as much of a pot of money to do that with.
They won't get it.
Mr. Cheetah.
Chair Rukavina, we have had some significant market issues in the two-year colleges also, most specifically, again, with nursing. The example that I gave about where it was difficult to bring our current nurses up to what we were having to pay to get new nurses was an example from the two-year institution. So I don't want you to think that the problem doesn't exist in the 2 years at all.
Representative McFarland.
That was my point.
Senator Pappas.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, on page R9, I would move the Senate language on 8.29 to 8.33, however, deleting on line 832 the words "in efforts." It's just awkward language.
I think it's very, very clear. Any questions from members? Not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, there's one other amendment that I have that I think we could do, and we could do the Neighborhood Alliance language. So the A23 amendment.
Okay, members, do you have the A23 amendment out there? This deals with
cell phones. everyone have it?
This is the language Senator Lass was concerned about on the loan program and coming in front of the, at least in front of the Higher Education Committee. So, Ms. Heegard,
Day 23.
You've seen it. Comments from the committee members? Comments from OHE?
Is this basically, I don't know who did this, is this basically kind of compromise to the housing center?
Nobody seems to have a problem with this. Any questions? All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Neighborhood Alliance.
Page 25 in the side by side. Representative Pappas moves the house language. Any questions on section 9? This has the $750,000 that goes with it, one-time money. Any questions? If not, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
We adopted R27.
Yeah.
You have something? Oh, yeah, we could do the construction management.
I was just going to bring up the construction management on R26, which I know that Senator Lass, we just passed your LAC language that comes in front of us. Did you take that guy's money away while I wasn't there and the
claims?
Take what? No, we did not.
Okay, thank you.
We did not revisit closed claim.
Senator Roebling, then Roebling, I guess we're going to offer the house language dealing with the construction management surcharge, and I know you've got some problems on the public part of this, but I think the public taxpayers will actually benefit from this much better than the status quo, and that the insignificant amount of money that on a project that we pointed out it costs to fund this program or this fee will far out, you know, the benefits from it will far outweigh that little cost. So, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a problem with the whole concept, actually, because I think MNST should be reallocating when there's a known shortage of certain kinds of workers so that they can increase their programs. I have a little bit, I'm not sure that the construction industry either has done enough recruitment, even from outside of Minnesota, from neighboring colleges, neighboring states' college programs. I was reading some of the documentation that they gave us, and for example, they're showing that Minnesota, yes, every year has about 170 positions open, and we're generating about 130 graduates. But in South Dakota, they have 10 positions open and are generating many more graduates than they actually have openings for example. And so I'm just wondering if we haven't tried to address this issue in some other way instead of going to this right away, which is a brand new source of funding, a new way of finding money for MNST, when I think it could be done in other ways to help solve this problem. So I just have a problem with the whole idea of what they're proposing right now. I'm not totally convinced that the shortages can't be resolved in some other ways, or even that there would just be some one-time money given to get the accreditation for Mankato and maybe buy some equipment for those programs and then expect MNST to work out the differences otherwise. I'm just not comfortable with the way this is set up.
And Mr. Chairman, there is review after 2 years in the House language. So we're only appropriating money for 2 years for the program.
We're only appropriating the money back to make that point, to clarify that point, that the fee would continue, but it would come back to the legislature for review.
So I would move on page R26, lines 26 through 27. Is that the end of it?
Yeah. 26, 20,
section 2.
on page R26, then Senator Pappas moves, I want to point out to the university if they have any concerns that we intend to have language that adds to this, that clarifies that the university's construction management program is also eligible to get these grants.
We're not ready to go with the language in R43 yet. We still are working on the language.
Okay. We've got the motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Why don't we take, I think that's about all we, is there any other side-by-side or anything we can do?
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Given the change that was adopted on the GI Bill, I think you need to revisit something you already adopted and unadopted.
Okay.
And that's on page R37. On line 2311.11, where you expanded the responsibilities of the Office of Higher Education to administer the GI Bill.
So those three lines?
Three words.
Those three words need to be unadopted.
Okay, Senator Pappas moves to delete and Minnesota GI Bill on line 23.11, which we have adopted previously when we adopted the OHE language. Is that clear to everyone?
Which page?
On page R37, Senator Roebling, we are basically, since we gave the GI Bill administration of that program to the Department of Veterans Affairs, we had previously adopted this language. So we were going to take this out of the Conference Committee report. Any questions on that? Not all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Members,
Mr.
we'll
Chair,
take...
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sharon.
I'm sorry, I wanted to go back to R26, the motion that we just passed, which I wonder if it was unclear to me. It's clear in this language that the appropriation from this new source of revenue will be reviewed in 2 years. Is there plans made for where the revenue source is going to go after 2 years, or might we also say we won't continue to collect this source of revenue after 2 years without further action by this body?
Well, that's the point, Senator Sharon, that point I was trying to make is that the money, the fee is going to continue to be collected, right, but under what we just adopted, it's just not going, it'll be reviewed by us on whether it continues to go here, so.
That's what I'm asking. Should we also discontinue the fee at that point unless we come back? Because now as Senator Roebling is saying, it's a new source of revenue without a definition, and it's a slippery slope for how to add money into
the
general fund.
It's the will of this conference committee then to address that, and fiscal staff can take care of that. The money, the fees also sunsets.
Yes.
Unless you want to.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure that we wouldn't have a tails problem or a forecast problem if we sunset the fee. Because I think if we should go under the assumption that all is going well and we want to continue the program, but that Representative Solberg wanted to review it, and that's a good idea to review it. But I think it'd be better to go on the assumption that we're going to continue it rather than the assumption we're going to sunset it. It's very difficult for planning purposes, I think, for programs to gear up to expand, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's over through whatever mechanism, you know, the legislature can reach an agreement, special session, falls through the cracks, whatever.
Senator Pappas, I wanted to make that point too, Senator Sharon. I mean, it's pretty hard for Mankato and Moorhead or the university to plan on this and then not know if after 2 years they have to, cost their plan.
I mean, who knows, the legislature in 2 years may decide no more fees, and then these programs are kind of screwed.
Mr. Chair?
Senator
Sharon, and I guess other members too, I think it was mentioned when the House was initially reviewing this proposal that the funds that are raised from the fee do not go to the general fund. They go into the special revenue fund. So your comment, Senator Pappas, about tail problems and so on and so forth, there may be tail problems in that fund, but, you know, generally, unless it was a big problem, it wouldn't come back before the committee unless, like in this case, the money is not going to continue to be appropriated from that fund.
Well, we still have to put the other language and adopt that whole language on page R 40, whatever it is, that deals with the distribution of that money. So we'll take up this discussion when we come back. Because we still also have to put the language in there for the years to continue to move forward. Why don't we take a recess? You are going into session at 12:30 as we are for 12. We'll come back. By then, we should have some
language
to adopt. And hopefully, we get this bill out of here at 6 o'clock. I think everybody in the room knows the budget intentions and also language intentions. So we'll take a recess, and we'll continue to work on the rider language.
Yeah, let our staff know if there's any problems. I know everybody has the same language.
We're in recess. I'm sure our members can get back, get off the floor and get up here to continue voting on this bill, and I'm hoping the Senate members. Why don't we shoot for 2 o'clock? Is that okay with everybody?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lyons.
I understand that the Senate's intent is to take up the HHS bill, the transportation policy bill, and possibly Senator Chaudhary's environment, natural resources, or energy resources. 2 o'clock may or may not work in terms of what we're
are you suggesting earlier or later?
We have to
because we have to.
Just for your information.
Senator Latz, your leadership has given us orders that this bill has to be voted out of here at 6 o'clock tonight. In order to meet timelines for it getting done in the revisor's office, being able to be reviewed by us to make sure there's no mistakes, getting to the and meeting the 12-hour rule. So we intend to get this bill out of here at 6 o'clock tonight, one way or the other. Mistakes or no mistakes.
Chair Lucavina, could we go earlier? 1:30, is that, I mean?
Well, that's what I was asking. I don't know what you were suggesting, Senator.
I wasn't sure if you had the full agenda of the Senate plans in mind when making your decision, so I just thought I'd let you know that.
We'll stick with 2 o'clock.
Okay.
Okay, we're in recess.
And on R2, that's the same situation.
Spreadsheet members and audience is basically the same. There might be a couple of little changes that I know of dealing with the technology number and this is final agreement and the India Center basically, right? So the only two changes with compared to this morning's spreadsheet is the technology number on page 1, line 18. And the India Center, wherever that is, here on page 2, line 55. Other than that, Madam Senator Pappas, if you want to move the spreadsheet for
the
numbers.
I just wanted to, we pass out the draft spreadsheet this morning?
Yes,
yes.
Everybody had it, okay.
Everybody had it, so audience members, those are the only two changes.
I did want to comment that under the number 19 technology line, we added $600,000 to the Minsky technology. And that was for the purpose of this, I talked to Ms. King about it, this Informatics. They're using their eFolio platform to do a pilot project on with Minsky employees on some kind of a web-based health insurance record access thing.
This language
came to us from state government.
Right, was carried in the state government bill. The language is still there. All of a sudden, we've got to spend money on it. So we're doing.
We heard it in our committee, so we know a little bit about it.
Do you want to comment on the indecent?
I don't know that we had a chance to change the language at all in the India Center. Did anybody work? Did you work on that? We are using the House language.
We're using the House language.
Well, we're doing a lot less money, only $150,000, which has to be matched. And really, the purpose is to show that there really is widespread interest in doing an India Center, because that's probably not enough money to actually do one, but to at least get it started and see if there's enough interest. And it's only one-time money, so that if the match doesn't materialize, the money reverts back to the general fund, and we know India Center. So it's a really big challenge to the Indian community if they really believe in this India Center to come up with a match.
And it looks like the university folks are sitting over there and not saying anything, so okay. Okay, so Senator Pappas moves the budget spreadsheet as that is dated 5707, final agreement at the top. Any questions? All those who favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Well, we'll wait on that one. Okay. We got two votes and you got one. And Senator Michelle's probably going to vote no, too. So we'll move on then. Moving on, Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair, on R2, the proposal is to take the House language on lines 2.5 to 2.12.
Representative Welty moves section 2 on page R2. Are there any questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
And under section 3, we're also continuing with the House language on page R3, under subdivision 3, the House language is changed to reflect the agreement. So that the four-year program maximum is $9,838. The two-year program in the first year is $6,114. In the second year, it's $5,808. And the living and miscellaneous allowance is set at $5,900.
Okay. Do we have to do anything about section 3 on page R2?
That is section 3.
So we're going through section 3 and subdivision 3 state grants. Okay. Okay. Representative Briner moves then lines 2.17 through 3.12 with the number changes as will be reflected, or as were mentioned. There's no back.
Mr. Chair, the next thing.
Hold on, I'll take a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Again, on R3, what is currently Senate language under subdivision 3 lines 3.18 to 3.29 will be moved to the for an appropriation to the Department of Veterans Affairs. It'll be Section 7. And it's on lines 3.25 to 3.29. It will be of this appropriation, no more than 3% each year may be used for the administrative cost of operating this program.
We had this discussion this morning. Does everyone understand that? We'll be moving the program to Veterans Affairs and allowing them a administrative allowance of 3% of the total. Any questions on that? Then Representative or Senator Pappas moves subdivision 3, just 3.25, Ms. Novak, 3.29, or all the way from
3.18?
3.18. Moves the language then on 3.18 to 3.29. With the language dealing with Veterans Affairs and the administrative costs. Any questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, on the bottom of page R3, subdivision 4 of the House of House language is proposed.
Representative Atkin moves lines 3.13 to 3.18. And on the next page to 3.21. Any questions? If not, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
And then, Mr. Chair, on page R4, the Senate language beginning on 4.3 through 4.20.
Any questions? Senator Robley moves the subdivision 5, 4.3. And then all the way down to subdivision 13 to 4.20.
And the numbers are changed to reflect the spreadsheet.
Okay, with that amendment to it then. Any questions on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, the next section is the Achieve Amendment.
Do we have the amendment passed out? Ms. Heegard has had a chance to look at this, I believe. Members, we had talked about our intentions this morning. I'll give you a chance to look at the amendment. But what we're trying to do is increased and reflected that this morning the increase to $4 million for this program. We're basically splitting it between the ICAP grants that are currently in statute and awarded by OHE and supplementing that to prepare students and for rigorous programs, and also the $2 million for international baccalaureate type programs and delivering courses online for those who may be isolated or not able to take advantage of the post-secondary options, etc. So are there any questions on this amendment labeled CS-61? Senator Robin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I know we struggled with this issue, and I was carrying the bill on the original proposal, and I still would like to try out some incentive money, and I don't think Senator Pappas, you indicated that we were going to come off the College of the Schools program and also the online learning and increase the ICAP. And those are all good things, but we don't have any, I don't think we have any opportunity for incentives with scholarships.
It's in here.
If you read on the second part, from 128 on, it mentions the, or 1.31 actually begins.
Mr. Chair, how many
involved. This would be for students enrolled in the ICAP program?
Yes.
So it would be senior high students in ICAP?
Right, and we're hoping that that the language you see on 2.3 to 2.5 might bring an extra one to give some incentive to the privates. Further questions?
I'm just wondering if the senior wanted to address what the governor's response was.
We're under call, by the way, so if you want to come up and make it quickly,
yep.
We can vote.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on down there now, but I suppose we're voting on alligators or something.
Mr. Chair and members, Susan Hegard, Office of Higher Education. I have spoken with the governor's office about this language that you've put forward, and I think one thing I'd like to say is, you know, thank you for at least trying to figure out a way to make this work, but I have to tell you that the governor's office and the feeling of is that, you know, first he started out with a $112 million program in the summer. He got criticized for that program. He reconfigured the program substantially. When the bill was introduced, it was $78 million. Then he came back again with a $21 million program, and you know, it's now $2 million a year. And if you, all across the country, people are trying to figure out ways of getting students to be better prepared for college. And this is not a new program. It's building on existing programs. Representative Chair Rocavina, we've heard your concerns about the access, and we've pledged to you, you know, that we would be able to try to, we would get out and try to do some education and some awareness about the importance of these programs. I think there's a way to be very responsive to that concern. I know there are concerns in the metro area as well as in greater Minnesota. But the level of funding, I think, it is something that is of great concern to the governor and the governor's office.
Okay.
He's been pretty clear with you, I think, about the importance of this program and the bill, and at this level of funding, he would find he finds this unacceptable.
Hold on a second. I need both of you to vote.
Yeah, but they need their vote down there too. So.
Well, they can't vote without us. We'll be right down. Ms. Hegard, I know the governor wants more money in this bill, so do we. And everybody wants more money, and in fact, our bill reflected that. But we have tried to deal, work with you, and you know, to start a whole new program. And I understand there's going to be federal money that's trying to address this whole issue of rewarding students who take rigorous courses.
Whoever had that cell phone, I know mine rang, but at least I'm the chair of the committee.
You don't get any special treatment, Senator.
All right, I'll turn off my cell phone.
But so I guess that's the issue. We don't have money to fund our whole system, whether it's MinSU, higher education, scholarships, I mean our grant program, whether it's for the privates or the public. So this is what we've come up with. It's a beginning. I hope the governor changes his mind. I don't, you know, he's got to start signing some bills. I didn't, you know, and that's, I guess, all I'm going to say about it. I mean, we don't have the money to do, whether it's $112 million, $78 million, or $21 million, we are not giving the systems what they're asking for. And several bienniums ago, they were cut $380 million between the two of them, and they're still not up to that level in actual dollars, much less counting inflation and everything else. So we've tried to work with you. It's a start, and hopefully the governor might rethink his opposition to this dollar amount, because the governor himself is complaining about tails in this bill to us, and it is under what he actually had proposed with his one-time funding. But and I know the governor is complaining about the tails in this bill, but when you take into account the $25 million performance pay in both bills and the $40 million of one-time money that the MinSU system got for technology, that's where the tails are. So, members, we can beat this to death, this whole argument about how much money should be here, but perhaps the governor has to come up with some ideas and about where new money could come from. So with that, all those in favor of the CS-61 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Can we, Madam Chair, do you want to, is there anything you can do? I guess there's nothing you can do. We got to go, so we'll be back as quickly as humanly possible. Staff, do you have a suggestion for us to move this process quicker? Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair, I would suggest you formally adopt this spreadsheet and direct the staff to prepare a conference report with writers that reflect the spreadsheet.
You've heard the, Senator Pappas moves the request by staff to do exactly what she just said. All those in, you're making that motion.
I'm making the motion.
Senator Pappas moves then to adopt the spreadsheet and instruct staff to make the changes necessary to implement that in the conference report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails this time and then it's adopted. Do we have another amendment that we have to draft? Members, as you know, we've been working, and Senator Roebling has been there, and Representative Atkins, to reflect change or agreements on just, not just the spreadsheet, but the language. We've gone through all of that. I think we had a discussion with what we didn't agree with this morning for the audience. And now these are the official amendments that we do have to adopt regarding language changes. Representative Pappas moves the A53 amendment.
Does everybody have it?
No, we haven't.
Regarding the membership of the Board of Trustees for Minskew, and I believe it also includes the it doesn't include the Board of Regents. Where is it? Okay. This. Senators, this is the language that Representative Briner and Senator Roebling agreed to regarding the Minskew makeup, and it keeps the membership at 15, addresses the geographic and gender and racial and ethnic balance that we talked about that was in the Senate bill, and the compromise language on the union and business makeup. So I'll let you look at it, Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the fact that we have a balance here with the union representation and the business representation, but my goal is really to keep it to one of each, and I see we have two of each here, and especially if we kept the board to 15 members, I thought it would be appropriate just to have one of these. Otherwise, we do use up then all of the positions on the board. And we have three from the students, the eight from the congressional, and then we have four right here that are already sort of pre-selected. And I don't know, I just sense that is too many pre-selected ones and such.
Representative Bryan.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I think we made the point earlier today that there could be duplication here, that these didn't have to be separate, so someone could be from one of the congressional districts and be a labor representative or meet some of the other criteria. So I don't think we're automatically filling all 15 positions, but my perspective is it makes sense to have two of each because we generally, I mean, there will be two business people on the board at least and maybe more. So this is to assure that there's at least two labor people. So I think it's a fair request to ask for two and two in order to have some semblance of balance. Because we, even though we ask for balance, we can't guarantee that it'll be that totally balanced. So I would argue that the two is a reasonable.
I was under the understanding that you had worked out this language with.
We didn't talk about numbers.
We did talk about numbers later, and we had suggested we keep the number at 15, Senator Roebling. So with that, I thought it was an agreement we all had worked out. I wanted to add two members. You suggested I shouldn't, and I went with your suggestion. So Representative Reiner moves the A53 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Senator Ramon. I would like to move an amendment to the amendment that we have one member from each member in business. I'm just going to throw it up there and see if I need to probably lose.
Senator Robley moves to amend the amendment that we have one member each. I would oppose the amendment. I thought this was reached in an agreement. So, all those in favor of the Robley amendment, the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. We have now the amendment, A53. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. We have the A54 amendment that is going to be passed out right now. And Senator Obling, it deals with the construction management program. So I know that you've had problems with that. We've tried to alleviate your concerns. Do you have the amendment yet?
No.
Is this the House language?
Say maybe for the members in the audience that are kind of clogging up the aisles there. And I'm glad you're here, and I would suggest you should go down to the governor's office and march around his office, because we share your concerns and wanted the Dream Act in this bill, but we're told that it was an automatic veto, which now it seems like we might have a veto anyway. But I think the majority of the people on this conference committee are on your side, but it's the governor that probably should go. I have no problems with you being here and exercising your right. This is your building, but so is the governor's office, so go march around. Okay, back to the 854 amendment. Has everybody seen the amendment then? And I think we have to also move language on R26 after we do this to complete the construction management program. Senator Robley, do you want to talk any more about the program itself?
Just trying to use this really quickly. I'm trying to understand how this would be appropriated to the different institutions that offer these programs.
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rowland, it is, as it was in the original House language, the appropriation goes to the Department, to the Office of Higher Education, and grants are made to post-secondary institutions with eligible programs, as to MinSU and the University of Minnesota.
We've now put the University of Minnesota in this amendment. And didn't we already adopt the language on R26? So we just have the amendment, then the need to do the amendment. Senator Robin.
Mr. Chair, the money portion and the fee was already adopted, right? And so
yes.
This is just the language on how the money will be appropriated.
Yes. Any further questions on the A54 amendment then? Not all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. We next have the Ms. Hegard. I'm sorry. Did you want to talk about the
Mr.
amendment?
Chair, I just wanted to ask a question. You know, we're bright and talented at our agency, but this is a very new area for us. And so, my questions is, who is it that we could go to find out more about this, you know, the interest there is in this? I mean, who did this come from? Is there someone that we could talk to about this to have an understanding of what it is that's expected of us? I mean, we don't have any knowledge, really. I mean, I know we're putting an advisory group together, and they're more knowledgeable, but this is a new thing.
This initiative, Ms. Hegart and members, came from the construction industry, Mr. Thieden, from the the Association of Minnesota Association of Building Contractors, Gary Thieden, S-T-H-E-D-E-N, I believe his name is spelled, who's been a lobbyist around here at the Capitol, and the need was expressed, and he discussed this in front of the committee, actually in front of our committee, and then in front of the conference committee. It was in the House bill. I think you were there the evening that, or someone was from your office, that we discussed it extensively in the House committee. And the advisory committee that's in here, I think, gives you direction, the Office of Higher Education, as far as the grant program and structure. And Senator Sharon, do you want to talk about your and it's also to help accredit with the accreditation of the Mankato program. Senator Sharon.
I would think that, you know, that the industry and then perhaps the chairs of those departments that are at the University of Minnesota State Mankato and the various schools coming together to maybe assist the department in how to put together a distribution formula for this good grant program.
I think, Senator and members, that wasn't the grant program spelled out? Did we adopt that language also? We didn't. So,
it's, Mr. Chair, the granting process is described in here where eligible programs apply for a grant, and the director of the Office of Higher Education makes a grant based on the criteria that are spelled out in the amendment.
Okay, so the language on R43 then we are not adopting, which was kind of their proposal, but I guess now it will be this advisory board and you that, in conjunction with the three programs that are being offered currently and any others that might be offered at two-year institutions or whatever, that determine how the grant process will work. Is that an understanding of everyone at the table and council? Okay. Further questions then at Ms. Hegar?
Mr. Michikanis? For the record, Mark Michikanis, Office of Higher Education. Just to make clear, what our concern is that in this program, you're having us make direct grants to instructional programs at Minsk U campuses, and that is totally new for us. And we were just, as we've talked about this, we are very aware of this and talked about it through the course of the last few weeks. It's just something that we haven't done before, and it kind of gets us involved in Minsk U and now the University of Minnesota in ways that we've never been involved. So that's the reason for our concern, is that level of engagement directly in their instructional programs.
Are you concerned about having a new responsibility, or that you might not be able to do it, or that you don't have the money to do it, or is there some administrative allowances in here, aren't there?
Oh, no, Mr. Chair, we I think there's $50,000 for administration, and I think what it's required is to bring together a group to decide who gets the money, which we certainly can do that. That's not an issue at all. It's just a whole different role for us that we've ever had in the past.
And are you concerned about that role is what I'm asking you for right now.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if there is still the 2 years on this or not.
Yes.
Certainly, we can do it for 2 years and come back and say, this is quite a bit different. So.
But we could change the administration. Well, Mr. Chairman, if this had come up a little earlier, we could have considered alternatives. Like, we could do a direct appropriation of, there are three programs, I'm not even sure. There are three programs, two Minsk U, one university. We could have set two-thirds to Minsk U of the money and one-third to the university. And we could have done it that way. We didn't know that you had some concerns about this, so I'm sorry.
Mr. Michikanis or Ms. Hegar?
Mr. Chair, I think along the way we've kind of had some, you know, conversations on the side with staff expressing some of these, but never.
We'll do our best, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to put the committee and members on notice that this is a new area for us. We'll, you know, and we'd like to be able to report back to you and let you know how it's going. I'm a little uneasy about it, but we'll do our very best.
But you're very good at doing what you know the legislative intent is. Very good. And
thank
so are you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Your years of being in the Senate, you know how sometimes senators don't give a clear direction, so you have to interpret.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I don't know that at all.
Senator Pappas, then, who moved this over? Representative Reiner moved it. No, who moved it? Nobody moved it yet?
Senator Sharon.
Did I prove it? Oh, okay, that's right. That's right, you came up after the adoption. Okay, so.
Region? Where's the region language?
Oh, the region language.
Mr. Chair, we're under call again. Representative Emmer is going after the Attorney General's office and is asked for a call of the House.
Members, I think after we adopt the region's.
We might be done. Does anybody else have any other amendments?
Amendment, we might be done, and the staff is. We did it, Chief. So this may be the last thing, and then Representative Emmer can go after me after that.
Yeah, I think I'll join in too.
With Representative Emmer.
On which side?
He'll need a lot more help, but I'm on your side.
Okay, we're passing out the A31 amendment. We'll be right down. This is it. The A31 amendment dealing with the Regents Selection Committee, Representative Senator Robley, do you want to explain this one and what you recommended, and maybe this one you support, because I don't think the governor's opposing this. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is what we did talk about earlier today. 2 years ago, we changed language and had the governor come in to make recommendations to the legislature for region candidates. And we all went through that process this year, and we realized that it would work very well. And so Senator Recovina had proposed we eliminate all of the language for region selection, and Senator Pappas had something to fix it. And this is a compromise somewhat between the two. We did eliminate the governor. We do have a joint legislative committee of all of the members of the higher ed budget and policy divisions. So it will be, at this point, it would be about a 32-member joint committee. We asked them to meet before February 28th of each odd-numbered year and listen to the candidates who are recommended by the advisory council, and also they can nominate other people who would come before that joint committee, and then they'd have a week after that presentation by possible region candidates to decide who they want to vote for. They'd come back and make their recommendations, and there would need to be a majority vote from that committee in order to forward recommendations to the floor. But of course, it doesn't stop the members from nominating from the floor. That is set in the Constitution. We can't change that. But this is the process on how we would like to see nominations get to the floor.
Well, members, I think it's well thought out, and I know Representative Reiner and Senator Robin worked on it, and well, it's not to where I want it to be. It's a good start in correcting. I think it was a mistake during the last biennium. So we have the A31 amendment before us. Are there any questions for the amendment? Senator Representative Welty?
Yes.
The phone. Oh, you were just clicking me on. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, are there, and staff, is there anything else we have to do to put this bill together? At this point, then.
Mr. Chairman, when do we think we'll have a complete copy at 9 o'clock tonight,
9:30?
Senator Pappas, will you then read the draft bill and tell me if you think there are any mistakes in it?
But I'm just wondering if people want to see it, that
we'll
maybe I should say that there would be copies available at my office in 120 sometime after 9 o'clock. And I think we've adopted all the provisions that are in the bill. You haven't seen the rider language. So people who want to see the actual rider language, that would be your opportunity.
Okay, is the audience aware that Senator Lance?
I'm sorry, after you took the vote on the last amendment, I got to the second page, and I do have a question, if I might ask.
You certainly are entitled to, since your father served on the Board of Regents. I thought you would actually support me in my proposal to go back to the way your father was elected. But Senator Lance.
It was pretty messy back then, Mr. Chair, and it's messy now, and I don't think you're ever going to take politics out of the region selection, but hopefully this will help streamline the process a little bit. On line 2.5, it says that the candidate must receive a majority vote of all members of the joint committee. Is that what was intended, so it's not a majority vote of the members from the House and separately majority vote of the members from the Senate, but rather all members of the committee? So theoretically, all of the House members could vote one way, all the Senate members could vote another way, and it would still move forward as a recommendation. Was that the intent?
Senator, that's actually the way the committee worked this year.
It was the rules that were adopted.
Those were the rules we adopted when we met in the committee under the legislation that was. We kind of adopted those rules on the fly that night. If you want to reconsider this to reflect the majority vote of either house, I mean of both houses.
You know, Mr. Chair, he has a good point, because this year the committees were divided 10 and 10, and now the House, of course, would have 21 or 22 members, and we only have 12, so you could pass it without any Senate support. That probably isn't a good idea.
Senator Lass, voting on the prevailing side, moves to reconsider A31 amendment. Senator Lass.
Maybe Mr. Fuller or Ms. Novak could assist me with this, but it would be my intent to amend this so that it would require majority members of each body.
We know the intent, and actually we're being pressured to get down to the House floor. We understand the intent. Council understands the intent. And Senator Lass moved then to be requiring on line 2.5, I believe, a majority vote of both houses. However you want to word that for it to be properly considered. Senator Lass moves to amend the 831 amendment as we just talked about. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. And we have the 831 amendment as amended in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. I believe the staff has been instructed. We are going, members. I want to thank everybody, including the audience, for their participation. I want to also publicly apologize to the people sitting over to my right who have been around for months talking about the Dream Act, that the Dream Act wasn't in this bill, and it's not because we didn't try, and I apologize to all of you for that, but perhaps the governor will eventually remember that he came from an immigrant family too, and it was his pressure that this bill would be automatically vetoed, that we removed it and put the other language in there. So students, I apologize to all of you, and hopefully at least what we have in the bill is a start for you to get fair treatment from this state and be able to go on and be educated and be the productive members of the state that you want to be. So I will publicly apologize to you for that. Is there anything else to come in front of this committee? If not, members, this conference committee is adjourned.
So, for sure, but...